Welcome, everyone. Looking for, here we go. AGP, are we ready? Okay, thank you. Welcome. Welcome to our regular city council meeting. Today is Tuesday, June 9th, 2015. We are at the Veterans Memorial Hall for our regular city council meeting. For the record, all members are present. We do have a quorum, and we'll call the meeting to order. At this time, Sam, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Taylor. Didn't miss a beat there. All right, with that, and if you'll please join me in a moment of silence. Thank you. All right, everyone. Got it rolling a little bit differently today, but we'll move on to mayor council members' reports and announcements. And to my right, John, do you have anything you want to start us off on under announcements? Noah?
Yeah, I did just want to give Mr. Endersby a chance to give us an update on what's going on with the Bayside Marina and Cafe. We've been getting a lot of emails about asking the council to take action, and I think it's important to get the information out there to the public about what we did, and give Mr. Endersby a chance to give a quick review from his side what's been going on.
Sure, thank you, Councilman Smuckler. So I wish I had a lot to report on, but I don't. As you know, the Harbor Advisory Board had a meeting where we considered the RFP process both for the cafe and marina there, and there was strong local support for the cafe and its operation, and support for the RFP process, meaning request for proposals process, staying local and not being lost in Sacramento in their larger process. So after that meeting, we reached out to Parks about the possibility of the city taking over that RFP process and operation of the cafe down into the future, and so far I'm waiting on a response from Parks. They indicated they thought that a meeting of the pertinent folks in Parks management, both locally in Sacramento and the city, would be the next step towards just starting the conversation to see where that may lead, and we have yet to get that meeting scheduled with them.
Just to reiterate, you have reached out to State Parks and are waiting their response, and we're trying our best to get the controller, at least see what that would look like from the city side.
Yeah, exactly. I have reached out a couple times, and again, it's just really start the conversation on, you know, Parks' perspective and what they think may or may not be possible and how they'd like to proceed, so we're waiting on them to get back to us with a meeting.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, just put – so reached out to the point of many back and forths, probably five or six different back and forths, and as recently as either today or yesterday, I saw a response from Parks to some questions Eric was asking. So we're actively engaged, but that doesn't mean we're going to be successful. But we're working it.
Yeah, so again, Council, we did direct staff to try to acquire control of that lease and consolidate it with our control of the marina and the dredging maintenance and so forth, which seems to make sense.
Okay, Matt?
Yes, I'd like to put a word out for Eric Endersby. He got Sam Taylor and I a ride on a Yakima the other day. We went out on the dredge and saw how they conducted business out there, and Sam constructed a nice video that he's posted on the city's Facebook page for those of you watching, if you want to watch and see what the dredge is doing. It came out really nice. And then a question for you, Eric. We have about 10 more days of the dredge, or a little bit less than that?
They changed crews today. They fuel on Friday. Their last day, I believe, is the 14th or 15th. So they had 20 total days, 4 days in transit back and forth, including those. So they really had 16 total days here. So I think that lands on about the 15th or 16th.
And so, and if I remember correctly from going out with him the other day, we're talking about at a mean high tide and putting about 40 feet of depth on the front of the harbor?
Yeah, the harbor entrance itself from the mouth on out going about a quarter of the way out to the buoy that's about a mile outside, that's down to 40 feet. And then just inside the harbor, it's down to 30, and then they're down to 20 in front of North Deep here, and then it goes down to 12 beyond that.
And then also, not to belabor the harbor and dredging, what is the what are the prospects or the process of going forward of looking for another grant to dredge the further back into the bay?
We're still actively trying to work with parks and looking with Department of Boating, Division of Boating Waterways on the possibility of any further grant funding from them. Now that Boating Waterways is in parks, we're hoping that that spigot might be a little easier to loosen and get something out of it. So far, we haven't any luck, but we're pursuing it.
Christine?
Yes, good evening, everyone. Thank you very much for the chance to talk to you about the two liaison positions that I am representing in the City of Morro Bay. The first one is a Homeless Services Oversight Council meeting I attended on May 20th. And you may have heard us talk here previously about the 50 Now project that is a countywide project to get 50 of our most critical and vulnerable homeless people housed. So that kicked off with Board of Supervisor County support funds 8 months ago, and so far we have placed 28 people in permanent housing. So that's really great. It's challenging to find space. So that's been something else that the HSOC, or Homeless Services Oversight Council, has worked on, and their representatives, again, from all the counties and various agencies in the county and all the cities included. And we're working to increase awareness to landlords that these folks who come in with particular vouchers are great tenants, and it's a benefit to have them. Actually, sometimes the money goes directly to the landlord and doesn't bypass through, in some cases, the applicant. So there's a lot of work to be done, though, in our county encouraging people to accept folks with special housing vouchers that can get them off the streets and into housing. And there's a lot of work being done now for homeless veterans. There's some specific money that came from the federal government to get our homeless veterans and their families in housing. So those are things that are happening countywide that Morro Bay is participating in the conversation. And then on the 27th of May, I am your representative on the Economic Vitality Corporation. And they have rotate different cities come forward and talk about their economic development strategy. And this past May, we had Grover Beach. And I would encourage anyone who's curious, especially in the city of Morro Bay, to go to grover.org. And that's the City of Grover Beach's website. They list out their economic development strategy and the things they've been doing since about 2004 on economic development. But it's interesting to note that since 2008, they have had an economic development strategic plan that they're working toward. So far, we've heard from our city manager in the City of Morro Bay this year so far, and the City of SLO, the City of Pismo, and now Grover Beach. So it seems that perhaps we're playing a little bit of catch-up in the City of Morro Bay to right our economic development ship, but we've done a lot of work on that this year. So I wanted to let you know. And I think for council, it would be very educational to go on the Grover website and see their economic development work there. Okay.
Great. Thanks
Thank
for that.
You. Mm-hmm.
And then I'd like to welcome Mr. Sam Taylor, and I would turn it over to Mr. Buckingham to do the introductions there, and then maybe Sam might have a few words.
Sure. Thanks, Mr. Mayor. So we're happy that that Sam Taylor is here in the Deputy City Manager role. He is actively engaged in day six here in the city. He is supervising our rec department. So in this room last week, the Rec and Parks Commission voted unanimously or recommended unanimously that that we move Rec Services Division underneath Sam. So that's one of the things he's doing. He is he's working hard on the city's IT. He's already got a website redesign team working on the on website redesign and is looking at our IT assessment and strategic plan. In the area of economic development, he's already engaged with a company in SLO that is interested in relocating to Morro Bay, a light manufacturing firm. He'll be the liaison to the our tourism liaison to the TBID, and is looking forward to their board meeting on Thursday, and is engaged in a bunch of public outreach already. And he is a certified city clerk. certified by the Universal City Clerks Association or something like that. So Ms. Dana Swanson is at City Clerk Training this week, getting additional training, actually elections training, for her role as city clerk. And Sam has graciously was voluntold that you'll be the city clerk tonight. So that's why you see him there. We don't know where he's going to sit at the next city council meeting. Sammy?
Sure. I just want to say thank you so much for bringing me to Morro Bay and welcoming me. My wife mentioned that for all the things that people say about California, it seems much more welcoming than Northwest Washington. And so we really do appreciate that. And thank you so much to Mr. Buckingham as well as the council for your support and welcome me so much. I got a hug from a council member today. That was odd as well, but I appreciated it. Thank you.
Okay, Noah, giving out hugs again.
That'll be year two.
Sam, welcome. We're glad to have you. And with that, that'll conclude our announcements. And prior to moving on to public presentations, I'd like to request that we pull item A14 on consent, and that is a proclamation supporting JDFR's mission to find a cure for type 1 diabetes. And I'd like to pull that and approve it for presentation. And I would make a motion to approve that. Second. I have a second. Any other discussion on that? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes 5-0. Didn't have any opposing on that. Thank you. With that, we have that, and we'll move on to public presentations. Claire Hazlett is our presenter for Living with Type 1 Diabetes presentation. Welcome, Claire, and we're looking forward to your presentation.
Good evening. I'm Claire Hazlett. I'm 11 years old, and I'm type 1 diabetic. I'm in the fifth grade at Monarch Grove Elementary in Los Osos. I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when I was 5 years old, so I've had it for 6 years, just 2 weeks before I started kindergarten. And JDRF, Juvenile Diabetic Research Foundation, holds Children's Congress every 2 years. There was 1,600 kids that applied, and there was only 163 chosen, and I was one of them. It's a great honor. But JDRF, as I said, there was 163 chosen. They were chosen by their application. It was a 7-essay-questioned application online where they asked you, like, what kind of activities do you do? Like, I wrote down, I sing in the youth choir at St. Timothy's. I'm an altar server. I do gymnastics. I go to Good News Club after school. So all those different things that you do, you put on your application. What I'm going to do in Washington, D.C., as I was picked as a delegate, is we're going to have one-on-one meetings with our senators and then our representative, which mine is Los Caps, training sessions to learn how to speak in front of Congress. We want to influence our California legislators to keep funding JDRF, Juvenile Diabetic Research Foundation, so type 1 diabetes will be type none diabetes. And we want it, one full day will be spent on Capitol Hill. There will only be a few delegates chosen to actually speak in front of Congress, and I'm hoping to be one of them. I was 5 years old when I was diagnosed, and we were on a trip to San Diego. I was just guzzling bottles of water and having to stop at every exit because I had to go to the bathroom. And my mom's like, we kind of got to get to our destination, so no more water. But still had to go to the bathroom all the time. Finally, a couple days later when we got home, I went to the doctors, and after tests and pricks and pokes and samples, they said that I was a type 1 diabetic. And my doctor sent me to Sierra Vista Hospital, where we spent 4 days, and they regulated my blood sugar. And then from there, we were sent directly to Los Angeles Children's Hospital, where we met my wonderful endocrinologist, Dr. Mimi Kim. And we go there every 3 months now, and she regulates my insulin pump so that my numbers stay in my range of 80 to 130, which are those, that's the range that you kind of want to be in. That's the perfect numbers, they call. And then, so she is my endocrinologist, and we go there every 3 months. And then I carry my test kit with me 24/7. It's always there. I carry 2 juice boxes in it, two granola bars, a pack of shot blocks, which are just little blocks that have glucose in them that rise my blood sugar to a perfect number if I'm low, glucose tab, which are pretty much the same, but they're half the amount of carbohydrates, my test kit, which is what I test my blood sugar with, extra batteries for my insulin pump, and alcohol swabs, so if I'm not near to a bathroom to wash my hands, I have alcohol swabs there to wipe my finger off before I prick myself. Diabetes buddies. Both my grandpas are type 1 diabetic. My grandpa on my mom's side was diagnosed when he was 25, and my grandpa on my dad's side was diagnosed when he was 16. My grandpa on my dad's side is now deceased, but my grandpa on my mom's side is like my best friend. He carries an insulin pen with him, so he gives himself injections every day, as I have an insulin pump that I carry on me. It's about half the size of our phones. I was speaking at sorority a few days ago, and we were talking, and her sister, one of the ladies that I was talking to, was one of the ones that started programming these pumps. And the pump that was originally was about the size of this podium. Carried it around. And then when it got to be the size of a hard book covered book, it was like a huge, big thing, and now it's tiny. He counts calories when we're eating dinner or, you know, our meals, and I count carbohydrates, so it's really different because instead of him saying, like, I'll be saying at dinner I have, we'll say, 50 carbohydrates, you know, and instead he'll be saying I have 150 calories, so it's a big difference. The difference between type 1 and type 2 diabetes is very big. Type 1 is insulin dependent and normally diagnosed with children and young adults. All the diabetics in this world, this pretty amazed me, is only 5% of them are type 1 diabetic. So 95% of them are type 2. It's an autoimmune disease, and only 5% of type 1 cases are diagnosed in adulthood. So it's mostly in children. Type 2 is the most common form of diabetes, and your body is insulin resistant. So your body doesn't know how to use the insulin. It can be treated with diet, exercise, oral medication, and sometimes, but not very common, insulin. And, well, wouldn't you call, if you were giving yourself insulin for your diabetes, wouldn't you call that type 1? No, because if you're type 2 and you're giving yourself insulin, it means that your body's still giving you that insulin for what you're eating, but it's just not using it, so you have to give yourself an injection. As in type 1, you're just not getting any insulin from your body at all, so you're just reenacting that. And so one of the sayings that a lot of us say is type 1 diabetics run on AAA batteries if they have an insulin pump. Type 2 diabetes is most common in African Americans, Latinos, Native American, Asian American, as well as the aged population. Is there any, responsibilities. Being a delegate, I have many responsibilities. I had to make a video for Congress about me, so that just told about my life, what I do, and how I proceed with my diabetes. A 12-page scrapbook that was sent directly to Congress, so that took a while. It was 12 pages, big. They were small pages, but it took a lot of time. Three video conferences with all the delegates and directors. So we all get on the computer, you know, we have a video conference, and they tell us the first one was about, like, just the basics of going to Washington, D.C. The second one was about is how type 1 diabetes has grown in the past few years. We just had three big things happen with type 1 diabetes. Medicare now pays for CGMs, contiguous glucose monitoring systems. Our president just signed their leases saying we can have type 1 special programs. For like JDRF is a special program, Juvenile Diabetic Research Foundation. And just about four days ago, we just cured diabetes in animals. Letters to both our California senators and Lois Capps. Even though we're not making the scheduling appointments with them, JDRF wants a letter from us personally to them. Local media, we don't get to really go to local media and talk to them about it. JDRF does that, and I'm part of the Los Angeles chapter, so they are the ones that are contacting them. One of my largest responsibilities is speaking to a group like I am today. This is my 12th group. And fundraising is the biggest one. I sent out about 100 fundraising letters to my family and friends, and I've collected so far the exact amount is $2,922. Is there any places I have spoken? I spoke at St. Timothy's Catholic Church, two classes at my school, the fourth grade classes, Los Osos and Cayucas Rotary, San Luis Obispo Toastmasters, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church, St. Timothy's Women's Guild, PCC Beta Sigma Phi Luncheon, and the Knights of Columbus. A fundraiser that's going to be my first fundraiser that I have done will be this Saturday, June 13th at 10 a.m. to approximately 3 p.m., depending on how much business I'm getting. We'll be in front of Albertsons, and I'll be selling root beer floats. Is there any questions about this?
Any questions from council? Seeing none. John?
Not a question, but just a follow-up comment. Being a clinician myself, I just want to tell you how proud of you I am to see somebody of your age coming up and advocating for a disease state that is extremely difficult even for adults to manage, and to hear how you have managed your diabetes. And the fact that you are out telling the story is a great thing, and you should be very proud of yourself. You should also know that there are some great advances being made, and there'll probably be a cure within your lifetime. So keep plugging away, and we'll be there for your root beer floats.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, John. Thanks, everyone. And Claire, we approved a proclamation for you, and the proclamation also is for you to deliver at the Children's Congress, and I want to read that to you. If you don't, I'll come down and read it to you and present it down there.
Okay.
So let me come down. First off, Claire, thanks again for coming and educating us on this. And what I have today is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Moore Bay supporting JDRF's mission to find a cure for type 1 diabetes. Whereas JDRF was founded in the Philadelphia area in 1970 by a group of local parents of children with type 1 diabetes to raise money for diabetes research and form the first chapter of what was then known as Juvenile Diabetes Foundation. And whereas JDRF is the leading global organization funding type 1 diabetes research, JDRF's goal is to progressively remove the impact of type 1 diabetes from people's lives until we achieve a world without type 1 diabetes. JDRF collaborates with a wide spectrum of partners and is the only organization with the scientific resources, policy influence, and a working plan to better treat, prevent, and eventually cure T1D, or type 1 diabetes. And whereas JDRF currently has research projects in 17 countries totaling $568 million, in 2012 alone, JDRF funded more than $110 million in type 1 diabetes research, and since 1970 has awarded more than $1.7 billion to diabetes research. JDRF is the only global organization with a strategic plan to bring those living with type 1 diabetes to a continuous flow of life-changing therapies and ultimately a cure of the disease. And whereas JDRF's influence and leadership extends beyond the funding research, JDRF strategically partners with industry, governments, foundation, academia, healthcare insurers, and clinicians to ensure that JDRF and its partners are aligned and working toward a common goal of a world without type 1 diabetes. And whereas the JDRF Children's Congress Type 1 Diabetes Advocacy Program was inspired by a boy from Massachusetts named Tommy Solo, who at age 9 asked his mother, "Why can't kids go to Washington and tell the representatives about what it is like to have type 1 diabetes? And tell the representatives about, and let them know that we want scientists to find a cure." His mom and other JDRF volunteers agreed, and in 1999, the first ever JDRF Children's Congress took place in Washington, D.C. And whereas since then, 8 children's congresses have been held and more than 1,000 kids with type 1 diabetes have served as delegates, JDRF's Children's Congress has been essential to securing continued government funding of type 1 diabetes research and to raise awareness of the daily burden of Americans living with a serious autoimmune disease. And whereas delegates to JDRF's 2015 Children's Congress enjoy a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to tell members of Congress what it's like to live with type 1 diabetes and why funding for research is so important. They serve as a voice for millions of children and adults who must live with the burden of type 1 diabetes every day until a cure is found. This passionate group of advocates inspires us all. And whereas Claire Hazlett is one of out of 163 delegates selected from over 1,600 type 1 diabetic children from across the USA that applied for the 2015 JDRF Children's Congress, and the City Council of Morro Bay is proud to recognize Claire Hazlett as the local girl recognizing San Luis Obispo County, California, for the 2015 JDRF's Children's Congress. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Morro Bay supports JDRF's mission to find a cure for type 1 diabetes and its complications through the support of research and the 163 delegates for the 2015 JDRF's Children's Congress. Claire, thank you very much for representing us. Thank you very much. This one's for you, and the other one is for Congress.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Thank you. Moving on from public presentation, we move on to public comment. And opening our public comment is our business spot of the week, Mr. John Elliott from Mike's Barbershop.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Barber John, although I do answer to Mike more than occasionally. I'm here as the business spotlight to tell you what Mike's Barbershop has accomplished over the past 2 years and to announce the opening of our north location. We have grown from a one-chair shop to a busy two-chair shop. We have 4 barbers currently and are open 7 days a week. Last time I spoke here, I gave the history of Mike's. We are coming up on our 75th year anniversary in 2016. With the subtle, earth-friendly changes we have made, we have converted this shop into the first eco-friendly barbershop in the barbering industry. For more information, visit our website, mikesbarbershop.com. We have information about our history, our barbers, and real-time solar power generation. Connect with us on social media from the link on our website to see daily updates about who's working and hours of operation. For over a year now, I've been a DJ on our local radio station, 97.3 The Rock. You can catch my show, Shave and a Haircut, 12 Hits, Sundays, 5 to 6. I play music, give barber tips, and take requests. I would like to thank the barbers who work here and my wife for making the business what it is today. I want to also thank the community for supporting us for the past 74 years. Looking forward to a 75th celebration year. Now, the main reason I'm here tonight is to highlight our newest location, Tiny Mike's Barbershop, at 2300 North Main Street in North Morro Bay, at Main Street in La Jolla. Our website, tinymikesbarbershop.com, to bring down current wait times in town and meet our community's needs, we plan to start off with traditional barber days, Tuesday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday, 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. At this location, we compost the hair and practice zero waste and plan on installing low-E lighting in the near future. The history of this shop is that it started as Rose's Barbershop or Beauty Parlor in the 1950s with Rose and her son cutting hair. In the mid-60s, the shop was rebuilt. At least one other barber worked here before Art, a retired highway patrol officer who ran it for about 10 years. Art sold to barber John Brito, who is now back working at Tiny Mike's and Mike's in town. As about the eighth owner, I plan to run this location with the same integrity as Mike's in town. With regular, consistent hours, excellent barbers, I will continue to give back to our community through volunteering, sponsorships, and donations. For the past 8.5 months, I have been working Wednesdays at this location to serve its customers. Starting today, I'm happy to say we are open for walk-in business. Yes, we will still shave around the ears at no extra charge and straight razor shave your face by appointment. We are all real barbers with over 75 years combined experience. Looking forward to a ribbon cutting party for Tiny Mike's, and we'll keep you posted on the exact date. Thank you.
Thank you, John or Mike. Appreciate it. And with that, we'll open up public comment. For those who would like to speak to any item not on the agenda, public comment is now open. Please come forward. Welcome.
Hello again, council members, mayor, staff. I'm Lynna Thomas, owner of Coalesce Bookstore and the Garden Chapel on Main Street. Tonight, I'm submitting for your consideration more signed pages of the parklet petition. We've collected almost 1,500 signatures, all asking that the parklet be removed from Main Street. Tonight, I'm also submitting updated results from the recent survey of Main Street businesses. I'm aware of the online survey the city is conducting that includes questions about the parklet. At Coalesce, we're handing out information about your survey to all our customers and asking them to participate. However, my community of business neighbors on Main has a unique and significant stake in what happens on our street. I believe their voices should each be heard. As you know, I recently borrowed from the LA Parklet Program a brief and totally impartial survey and distributed it to 18 Main Street businesses. I gave you initial results 2 weeks ago. As of today, 14 of the 18 businesses have responded. The data has been impartially compiled, and I have updated results for you tonight. Each of you and Mr. Buckingham will receive a copy of the report. The results are surprising. 13 of the 14 businesses say no to the parklet, a resounding no. They do not believe it has had a positive impact on their businesses or on our community. They say it is unnecessary, is poorly located, is unattractive, and reduces crucial parking places. They do not feel it has increased foot or bicycle traffic in our neighborhood, nor has it led to increased sales or business volume. If the intention has been to give business on Main a boost, I can tell you that has not happened at Coalesce. A number of my colleagues have been candid with me about their income losses for the year so far. 6 months is an extraordinarily long time for a trial period, but it has given all of us on Main adequate time to evaluate the impact of the parklet on our businesses. A stated goal of your council, is the support and encouragement of local business. Please don't ignore the responses and opinions of the great majority of the Main Street business owners speaking to you through these survey results. Their voices are loud and clear, and they harmonize with the 1,500 voices of the petition signers, move the parklet off of Main. Thank you for hearing my comments again tonight.
Thank you, Lynna. Thanks, Lynna. Thanks for your work.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. I'm coming to ask you again tonight about zoning compliance. I know in the budget there's money for a zoning compliance officer, but one of the biggest reasons that you need zoning compliance is for fire and safety. And the specific item I'm talking about is it's very warm in the valley, and we're finding citizens are bringing over their small trailers or big trailers, parking them next to their houses, hooking up their electricity, water, and basically our neighborhoods are really feeling the impact of RVs parked in single-family zoning adjacent to their house. And I say that I know that you're going to put a zoning officer on the budget, but you have fire and safety in the fire department, and it seems to me that this would fall into their jurisdiction. I know the grand jury said that we should handle it. Our complaint system was not working, but I still think this is a very high priority, and it would be a shame to have a bad situation because there's one specific place where we have children living in a trailer next to the house. The driveway is blocked with a wooden structure that's actually built in the public right away. I've brought it up. I've not seen it change, and I think that this really needs to have some close examination in the near future. Thank you.
Thank you, Barry. Anybody else for public comment? Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council. I was looking down at staff for any kind of questioning thoughts on some of those last comments. Were you kind of inquiring for more information on that?
The inquiry was, where was this located? Because it's nothing that inside of at least planning that I'm aware of.
Okay. All right. I'm sure we can hook you up with that information. Is that correct, Mr. Brannon? Okay. We'll get that. Thanks. Anybody else for comments back from council? Seeing none. Thanks very much. And Lena, thanks for your work on that. I know you've been working on that. Thank you. With that, we'll close public comment and bring it back to council. And we'll be moving on to consent. And we'll once again open it up for public comment for any items on consent. Anybody like to speak to any item on consent may do so now. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. And anybody on council would like to pull an item, and I would lead off pulling item A11. Anybody else to pull an item?
A6.
Anybody else?
A5.
Is that it? Okay. I would take a motion to approve all items on the consent agenda with the exception of A11, A5, and A6.
So moved.
I second.
I have a motion by Mr. Heading, a second by Ms. Johnson. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Item A5, Matt, that is status report of major maintenance and repair plan for the existing wastewater treatment plant.
Yes, Rob, this is a question I've already emailed you about, and I wondered if you could talk to it a little bit. And I look down at the third paragraph under background. This is where my question came from. Now that we're going into fiscal year 15-16, we've had carryover, it looks like, from 13-14, 14-15, and into this current fiscal year. About how much are we talking altogether?
I don't have the amounts from previous years, but from this year to next year, we were probably a bit more optimistic on finishing projects than we actually completed. So we'll be the digester project will be all but $30,000 complete. Two projects, the repair of the biofilter arms. The biofilters are the also called trickling filters, so the rock filters that wastewater drips over and a biological process takes place in the rocks. Those arms are severely corroded. We'll need to replace those arms or repair them. That's about $65,000. And then we had set aside in previous year's budget $150,000 to construct flood walls around various components, and we're actually re-looking at that project to look at alternatives besides permanent flood walls around those structures, looking at options like sandbagging machine, water-filled barricades to act as flood protection. So those are the projects that we're looking to carry over for this next year. And we'll probably do some major retooling on the flood control component.
Okay. No, thanks. No, the reason why, because I know in the last fiscal year there was four or five big projects and a couple of them didn't get finished. And so I just wanted folks to know that not only are those projects that there's still more planned ahead for the next fiscal year, but those projects that didn't get completed were still going to be worked on with money carried over.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Christine?
If you may, I'd like a follow-up. Just could you, once again, for folks who maybe step in and step out of council meetings, why were we considering flood wall installation? It was a mandate. Could you speak to that?
The NPDES, or National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit that we have for our wastewater treatment plant requires that it be protected to a 100-year flood. The existing plant, as we all know from the previous project, has depths of up to 6 feet in some of those locations where those floodwaters would come in. And I don't see any structures that are over 6 feet tall that would protect that from being flooded. Yet we have in our files a signed certificate that says that it is. So we need to actually do that flood protection in accordance with our permit. What prompted this, not only our permit, but a incident that happened in South County Sanitation District plant where that plant was flooded, and they are still suffering the repercussions of the millions of dollars in fines that they face due to that flooding. So we've worked on the most critical components first, and now we're rethinking some of the other maybe not so critical components of protecting with a different method rather than constructing permanent for a not so permanent plant.
Right, great. Okay, thanks for that explanation. I'm sure that the council would, since this item is open, I'm sure that that would be something we'd want to talk about, or at least see continuing updates on the flood wall installation, just the nature of it to a facility that will be demolitioned. Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Christine. John or Noah? I just wanted to follow up since the item did was pulled, and just to compliment staff's work on that. I know it was noted in the staff report, and clearly having gone out and toured the facility and seen the craftsmanship that's taken place out there, very impressive work, and I know those guys work pretty hard and doing a wide variety of specialty work. So I just wanted to send out the compliments to their work.
I'll pass that along.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, I would take a motion to approve item A5.
So moved.
Second. Motion by Matt. Second by Noah. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. Moving on to item A6. Noah.
Yes, thank you. I did just want to pull A6 to give Rob a chance to provide us and the community an update about our progress on the new water reclamation facility, wastewater treatment plant, and let us know what steps have been taken since we last talked about it and where you see it going over the next month.
Sure, thank you very much. Attached to the staff report is an ever-expanding list of things that we've done, and I'm not going to go through the since the beginning of time. I'm just going to highlight a few items. Back at the beginning of the year, working with our partners in Cayucas, we started the development of a request for proposals for facilities master planning, and we completed that request for proposals, got it out on the street. And since that time, Cayucas and Morro Bay are exploring different options, so we changed that to a two-party contract. Those proposals were received back in to the city. We received two proposals, one from Black & Veatch and the other one from Corollo. We met with our subcommittee from the WRF-CAC to discuss those proposals, establish a list of questions for the prospective consultants, and we'll be interviewing those consultant teams on June 16th. After that interview, we will be making a presentation of the results to our July WRFCAC, followed by a presentation to council recommending one of those firms. I'm anticipating recommending one of those firms for to continue on with that work. In addition to the facilities master planning work, we also have two more consultant services requests out on this, currently out on the street, one for a program management consultant or team, and the other for environmental review. Both those proposals are due back to the city on July 14th, and we'll be going through a similar process. In fact, at tomorrow's WRFCAC meeting, we'll be selecting WRFCAC members to serve on those selection committees too, and run a very similar process that we're doing now for facilities master planning. I think that's really concludes the update of where we're at in the recent history on the project, and look forward to working through these next steps and getting to the real fun engineering work that we're going to be proceeding forward with on the project.
All right. Thanks for that update, and for staff for keeping this moving, and especially for the Citizens Advisory Committee to all the work that they're doing to help us keep this thing going and represent, I think, the council and the community really nicely.
Thanks, Noah. Anybody else? Matt?
Yes, Rob, I have another question. I emailed you earlier about I've gotten a few questions from folks in town. They're going, hey, how can I see a calendar of events or a flow chart of how this project is going to, and you sent me a link, and I don't expect you to have the link memorized right now, but for those people out there who want to see the progression of how this project may or could move forward and see what needs to be done, where should and how should they go about it?
So on our, if you go to the city's website, and there's a left-hand link that links you to the project page, the WRF project page. About in the middle of that page is another link that says project schedule or updated project schedule, something like that. Click on that. That'll bring up a Microsoft project representation, a graphical, and with many too many numbers and dates in there. Probably the next... we'll add something to the next time we post this, is simplifying it, probably collapsing some of those schedule items so people can see the big picture, and then drill down to detail if they want to open up another page to do that. So what we have out there right now has a lot of detail in it. We'll probably add another product to that that has a little bit less detail, gives you a bigger picture view, and then you can drill down for detail if you need to.
No, perfect. And I did that after you sent me the link. And so, folks, when you do look at it, Rob is not lying to you. There's a lot of details there. But if you see through it and you can follow the dates, and you can send me an email, and then, or send Rob an email, and then you can answer. Thank you. Thank you, Rob.
Thanks, Matt. Christine, anything? Seeing none? Okay. Thanks for the update. One more. John?
Rob, just one question. Where are we on the negotiations for the MOU purchase of the land?
It's not a purchase MOU per se. It's a agreement to move forward. We can't work on a purchase until we're complete with our environmental review. I think it's the MOU is stalled out in my court. I need to add some information that I received back from our city attorney's office. I'll get that back to Mr. McElvain. I think our next step is to probably stop emailing it back and forth with each other and sit down in the same room and just discuss it. So I'll be working with Steve on setting up that date where we can just all sit down together, because we probably will never get it done if we just continue to email it back and forth with each other. Yeah, we are so far apart, yeah.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. And with that, Noah?
I'll move approval of A6.
Second. Motion by Noah, second by John. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. Moving on to item A11. Item A11 is resolution of number 3815, authorizing and directing the installation of all-way stop signs at Main Street and Pacific Street. I just pulled this. I know we went through discussion on this and had recommendation from staff, and I know where we ended up on this. I just wanted to throw out something to reconsider on this particular intersection. Considering we are going to be going through a downtown specific plan, and we have other intersections that really are equally difficult, if you want to put it in that category, I would ask this council to consider not approving this resolution and the four-way stop at this time. In one part, our staff didn't have any findings that would support a four-way stop. And in another way, just to take this and have this recommendation, and I'll look to Rob. I'm sorry, Rob, I didn't get to prep you much for this question ahead of time, but Rob or Scott, but somehow we can still have this inserted into the discussion during a downtown-specific plan, since that is on our goal. But anyway, I wanted our council to reconsider our thought on that instead of just going ahead and going and approving a resolution that would install a stop sign at that intersection, that we actually direct staff to take this consideration during the downtown specific plan update. It would allow us to evaluate other intersections and how it influences the whole downtown during that workshop and specific plan. So those are my comments on that. And I would take any other conversations from council and or staff. And I guess at one point I do need to, we already opened it up for public comment, but any other comments from council? John?
In response to that, Rob, I would just ask the question with regard to the A11 item. The whereas, bottom of page, last whereas, council has determined that it's appropriate to assign right-of-way at the intersection of Main Street based on a petition, and I do recall that. What are the other functional concerns?
I believe that the council was concerned about the safe operation of that intersection, and although it wasn't supported with the data, there was significant council concern regarding the operation of that intersection.
Anything else, John? Any more discussion, Noah?
Yeah, do you want to let Rob respond to your other questions? Or
Rob, any Scott or Rob, usually I get a chance to prep you on some of these questions so you weren't caught off guard, but I know you guys are very capable on the spot, so.
I think I'll take that one. As far as the specific plan goes, that's an interesting concept. I hadn't, initially anticipated doing much in the way of traffic, because we're going to do an update to the circulation element of the general plan as part of the general plan and LCP update. That would be a duplicative process where we did, analyze intersection function as part of the downtown specific plan. So I was going to be kind of veering away from that a little bit and doing that through the, through the general plan update process, because that is something that we have to update for the city as a whole. And doing it twice didn't seem to make a lot of sense. So that was kind of where I was going with, evaluating traffic in the city. It is one of the mandatory elements that we have.
Okay. Anything? No, go ahead.
One thing I'd add is, as we go through the circulation element of the general plan, and as we consider the Embarcadero zone and the downtown specific plan, there has been very informal discussion of the Embarcadero even becoming one way, and having a traffic pattern that would be a looped traffic pattern. So you would go down the Embarcadero, up the bluff, and it could, if not go through that intersection, go near that intersection. It certainly would go one block away if it didn't go through that intersection.
Thanks for that. Any other discussion, Noah?
Yeah, I just want to comment that we did have a pretty significant and strong debate about this, and the strength of the petition was one of the things I had in mind when we made when I made my decision to support the petition, and I think the inclusion of many neighbors in that petition caught my eye. There were residential and business neighbors that had signed that. A lot of them, more than I'd seen in other petitions for stop signs. And so I think the call is very much for some form of traffic calming. I think we're going to need traffic calming in that intersection regardless of which direction we take, and that if we go forward with a circulation plan or something to do on the Embarcadero, we could shift from stop signs to something better, but I'm expecting some traffic calming to happen down there. And so far, I haven't heard anything that makes me think that there's something out there better than stop signs. So I also have a concern that we had the debate. It was a scheduled council meeting. Yes, it's been noticed, and it was here tonight as a resolution, but I'd be concerned that at this point there's been a sigh of relief from the petitioners, and if we do anything other than approve this tonight, we're probably, I think for good cause, I would support it, but at this point I think we're just kind of starting to beat on an issue that we really talked about pretty significantly. So I'd hope that we'd go ahead and approve this tonight.
Okay, thanks for your comments. Anybody else?
Yes, I'd like to comment. I see your point, and in terms of the general plan, Scott talking about the circulation element. On one hand, it makes a lot of sense to perhaps pause this stop sign, but however, this intersection over the last number of years, I mean, it gets a lot of business, and those neighbors there were very vocal about having it mitigated somehow. I do agree. I see your point. I'm not so sure that a stop sign is the perfect fix it. But however, these folks, and we talked about creating a balance from Harbor Street to Pacific Street with Morro Bay Boulevard in the middle, and that this would be some way of helping that downtown corridor calming effect. So I see your point, but however, I think given the play that we had from the citizens and that meeting and the debate that we had, that I'd still like to move ahead with that.
Okay.
So I'll just say that I agree with Noah and Matt on this, and I understand that engineering-wise there probably would be maybe zero stop signs in Morro Bay if we stuck to the data, and I recognize that we're overstepping data bounds by agreeing to it, but I think that points were already made by Noah and Matt, and I have nothing else to add, and I would hope that we would support it tonight. But I understand bringing it up, and I think this came late in our agenda, and as I recall, mm-hmm. and I think perhaps sometimes when we operate late, there are good ideas that could have been brought up for discussion mm-hmm. at that time, but sometimes we don't capture them. Mm-hmm. But we're also moving a great deal of business through the city in general, and sometimes things aren't perfect. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate you bringing it back up for further discussion, but yep. I feel strongly about it.
Okay, good.
Yeah, thanks.
Anybody else? Any more discussion? We'll move on.
Yeah, I would. I do recall the vocal outcry by a number of concerned citizens that this was problematic and there were safety issues associated with that. And I supported it at the time, and I agree from my own personal observation that at times it appears that there are problems with that and calming is necessary. But just in thinking about it, as you raised the question, Mr. Mayor, I wonder if indeed we're setting a pattern where the squeaky wheel continues to get the items, and I'll just use the term approved, because they're brought forward without appropriate, normal, and routine study. That would lead us to a conclusion based upon rational planning. And I would only bring that up as a note of process, and are we possibly setting a precedent for that? Example, we had a number of local folks that were realtors at the last meeting that came and wanted to see the business license process changed. And just because of that vocal outcry, there wasn't agreement with that on the part of the council. However, it was based upon good study and rational decision making. And so I just open up the general process question in terms of doing this. And so with that, I would be concerned about, now that I think about it, that you've raised it, violating that principle of determining through the routine approach if indeed it would be necessary. So,
thanks, John. And I think we can probably close this. I think we know where we're at this. But I did want to bring it back up to reconsider based on the thoughts. And I think Christine Rose, it was kind of a later discussion. And sometimes you do get a few more discussions. I thought maybe it was worth bringing those discussion up to the front for council to reconsider. I won't be supporting that. I know there are a lot of petitioners there from the neighborhood. I'm one of those people that frequent that, and based on staff's recommendation that there was nothing that warranted that, I just didn't feel there was that kind of justification, nor from a personal standpoint. So I basically wanted to just reconsider holistically through either the downtown specific plan, some circulation element or that way. But it seems as though, I know where we have kind of the majority of our movement on that, respect that, but I just wanted to throw out that reconsideration. Noah, you had some closing comments, and then we could take a motion and move on.
Okay. Yeah, and I do respect your more holistic thinking. I would comment just for public information that this did follow a process that's approved and set up by the council and the city to allow for some discretion and give us the potential to make a quasi-judicial decision. In this case, we had to look at it, and it didn't quite line up with the data, but there was a large outcry from the neighborhood, and I think in our case, there's an issue there. That's why I'm willing to support it. So I will go ahead and move that we approve Resolution 3815 as written.
Second. We have a motion by Noah, second by Matt. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? Discussion?
Yes, indeed, yes. Thank you, Councilman Smuckler. I do appreciate that. I do agree with your comment that at times we will move things forward, possibly out of routine consideration for the processes that have been established because of perceived and real issues raised by not only the community but also concerns noted by the council itself. And so I would concur and validate your comments. I just wanted to say that. I also, as they think about this, would not be inclined to support it simply because of the fact that I feel strongly about following protocol with regard to this issue. So,
appreciate that. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
Motion carries 3-2. Councilmember Heading and Mayor Irons dissenting. Okay, great work, guys. That concludes our consent agenda, and we will be moving on to, here we go, unfinished business. Is there any need to take a short recess, or are we ready to move on? We're ready to move on. So unfinished business. On unfinished business, we have item C1, C2, C3, and C4. I'll just read those into the record. Item C1 is resolution number 3115, adopting the fiscal year 2015-16 operating budget. The recommendation is to adopt that resolution. Item C2 is resolution number 3215, rescinding the resolution number 1310, and establishing the risk management internal service fund and committed fund balance. Recommendation is to adopt resolution number 3215. Item C3 is resolution number 3315, rescinding section 5 of the resolution number 5593, rescinding resolutions number 2710 and 4211 in their entirety, and establishing the General Fund Emergency Reserve Fund policy and accepting the management partner's financial forecast assumptions. Recommendation for that is to adopt resolution 3315. Item C4 is resolution number 3415, establishing the strategic investment spending plan. And the recommendation is to adopt that resolution. I think we can open all four of these items at the same time. I would just look to council to get council approval on opening up all four of those for discussion. This is a budget item, and we'll be able to discuss all four of these at once. And I'm getting head nods from everybody. We're looking good. Okay, good. And with that, we'll open up items C1, C2, C3, and C4 as read. We'll go through the staff presentation, and then we'll open up. We'll have questions from council, and then we'll go into public comment and come back for discussion and deliberation. With that, Mr. Buckingham.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I note that it's just a few minutes past 7. Might we all drive home in the daylight tonight? It will be a first for me, but that would be great. That shouldn't stop us. And I note that because I didn't watch all of the hours this week, but we have all spent over 20 hours together in this room in the last 5 months working on this budget. Have had great participation from our residents, and so I'm going to try to find a sort of the sweet spot here in not regurgitating 20 hours or even 5 hours or 2 hours worth of all of the detail. But it's important to note that there is a whole lot of detail behind this. That said, I think we all agree that sort of having an appropriate level of detail so that a single viewer of the record here can be sure that that we've done our due diligence on this budget is appropriate. So I'm going to go ahead and start working through this, and hopefully it will still be daylight when I'm finished and when you're finished, and we'll see. Sorry, push wrong button. The purpose of this presentation is to summarize the fiscal year 16 budget that the City Council tentatively approved with changes at our May 20 budget study session for adoption tonight. And as the mayor noted, we've opened four different items on the agenda. All are directly related to the budget. And so this presentation covers all four of those. And then you can we've got a motion for you to consider approving all four together in one motion. Our recommendation is that you adopt the FY16 budget resolution 3115, that you adopt the risk management fund resolution 3215 with a minor change to what was posted last Wednesday on the website, and that change is you have that as a red line, and the public has it at the back of the room. It simply notes that the current or previous reserve level for the risk management fund was $500,000. Number three, the council adopt the general fund emergency reserve resolution 3315, also with a minor change, noting that it would be reviewed as directed during the budget process instead of specifying in the month of May, which gives appropriate latitude, and that you adopt the strategic investment resolution 3415. So the budget schedule that we went through in January and February, the council established the city's 73 fiscal year 16 budget objectives. There were three meetings on that, two study sessions and a council meeting with significant public input and staff input. And going into those, we know that those were going to help drive our budget. In March of 15, you hosted a 10-year budget forecast study session that management partners did with us for another 3 or 4 hours here in the room, looking 10 years down the road at our budget situation. In April, your staff took those two items, our goals and objectives and our knowledge of the 10-year forecast, and developed a draft budget that was based in large part on the objectives and informed by that forecast. On the 5th of May, we provided that budget to you, and you had several weeks, and the public had several weeks to review it. On the 20th of May, we spent a wonderful five-point-something hours together in this room going in detail through that budget, and there were a few changes, but they were not wholesale changes, so we were able to make those, and now we bring that to you this evening for adoption, as I just noted. For the presentation, I intend to cover the two fiscal policy considerations first, and then look at the fiscal year 16 base budget and the staff sections, budgets, some items not in the budget, and council sort of benevolence giving, and then finally look at the one-time spending prioritization list. The two fiscal policy considerations, the first is the general fund emergency reserve, and one of the resolutions you're considering tonight deals specifically with this. Our 10-year budget forecast showed two looming concerns for the city. One is a CalPERS contribution spike that will last for about 5 years. We'll show a chart on that here in a moment. And the second is that we're predicting a recession in fiscal year 17. Might come tomorrow, might come in fiscal year 18, might not come in 20, but it's important to note that we're planning on something, and so we're looking down the road and taking appropriate action, and hopefully we won't be just surprised by a recession. So those events, however, taken together are going to cost something. The CalPERS spike is going to pension contribution spike is going to increase our expenses over the next about 3.5 years, and then a recession could decrease our revenues during the same period. That will require us to do one of two things: either to cut services in that period, that fiscal year 17 to 21 period, because we would not have the revenues to match our expenses, or go into a moderate deficit spending in fiscal year 17 and 18 in order to keep our services at the current level. In several settings, and in fact at the budget study session, the council indicated a clear willingness to consider moderate deficit spending during those forecasted lean years. And the resolution referring to the on the general fund emergency reserve addresses that. So our very, very healthy general fund emergency reserve will allow us to ensure that those 2 years will allow us to execute 2 years of deficit spending without dropping below a still very healthy 16.5% reserve level, which is indeed the Government Financial Officers Association recommended level. So we would stay well above that level. I'm going to come back to that slide. I'd just like to note for the community, really, for you also, again, as a reminder, those medium-term challenges are the California-wide pension contribution spike and the moderate recession that we're projecting. The bad news is that they affect our budget. The good news is we see them coming, and we're taking appropriate action. So this is the CalPERS contribution spike. We are, as you well know, have been tied to CalPERS for many years as the pension fund for our staff. The CalPERS system is reforming, albeit slowly, but there's going to be some bumps in the road. One of those bumps is coming up, and if you look at the chart here, Morro Bay is going to see a significant increase in our contribution to CalPERS over the next 3 to 4 years. That's the red dotted line that goes up dramatically, and then the blue line that goes up dramatically. The good news is, unlike most of the rest of the state, those two lines come back to normal, to what they are now, at least, very, very quickly. So most cities in California are seeing that spike, but seeing that raised level of contribution requirement for a decade or more. Thankfully, here in Morro Bay, we're going to see that spike for about 3 years, and it's going to drop back down to where we are very quickly over about 2 years. And so we see that bump coming, and one of the things that this resolution does is, what should we do about that bump? Should we cut services during that period, or consider using our healthy general fund reserve as sort of an air cushion, so that spike doesn't directly affect services, but we sort of think our way through it. So we need to prepare ourselves for about 4 years of higher labor costs, but then dropping right down. And for those that are watching and interested, over the long period, you'll see those pension contributions gradually reduce for about 15 to 20 years, and then they drop off very quickly, and then they sort of stabilize for a long period of time. So that's the contribution spike we need to keep our eye on. The recession, we just need to be reminded that on average recessions occur about every 6.5 years here in the U.S. since the Great Depression. We're planning for a moderate 5% recession or retraction in revenues in fiscal year 2017. One of the challenges is this recession, projected recession, sits right on top of that CalPERS pension spike that I just showed, which makes the situation more significant than it would be if they were separated by time. So, as with all recessions, the timing of it is a guess, and the severity of it is a guess. If we knew when it was coming and how much it was going to be, then we could all be quite a bit more well off than we are, but we don't. So we're guessing when the recession is going to be. But the good news is we're planning for one, and we're gonna plan for one at 6 years from the last one. If it comes in, we'll be ready for it. If it doesn't come then and it staves off for a couple years, that will be good. So this chart here shows what our most likely budget picture is for the coming 8 years. The blue bars there are the level of our general fund emergency reserve. That's how much money we, quote, have in the bank for a rainy day. That's your reserve. The top red line is our current policy level reserve requirement of 27.5% of 3-year trailing general fund revenues. The bottom red line is that Government Financial Officers Association recommended reserve level of 16.5%. So what you'll note right now is in fiscal year 15 that the blue bar is actually well above the top red bar. That means we have more reserves right now than your policy requires us to, and that's good. And then if you see it bump up a little bit from 15 to 16, what that shows is we actually need to put some money in the bank this year to save for the rainy day that's coming. So the budget that you've tentatively approved and may adopt tonight actually is in the black by $70,000, so that we end the year with a little bit more money in our general fund reserve. But that's so that you'll see there's 2 years, fiscal year 17 and fiscal year 18, where we go into fairly significant deficit spending, and our reserve level drops below that 27.5% line. But then in the out years, that's 2 years of deficit spending. That's when that CalPERS spike hits us the worst and when the projected recession is. And then as the CalPERS spike drops off, and as the economy recovers, we will we'll again have balanced budgets, in fact, surplus budgets, and begin building our reserve back up to our target level of 27.5%. So staff recommends that you pass Resolution 3315, which affirms the 27.5% general fund emergency reserve level, while designating the following year-end minimum reserve levels for the next 7 years. And those are listed there on the slide. They're listed in the budget letter, and they're listed in the resolution. And so what you will essentially be doing is affirming 27.5% of revenues, trailing revenues, as our reserve goal, but acknowledging that we've got a couple of lean years coming, and we're going to consciously dip below that a little bit, because if we don't do that, then we have to cut services. So it's one or the other to balance the budget. We either need to dip into our savings account a little bit to make it through those couple of bad years, or we need to cut services. And I believe we're in agreement that one of the reasons you have an emergency reserve is so that you can make it through a lean year or two without cutting services significantly. So this resolution, it notes the CalPERS and the recession and drought concerns. It affirms 27.5% as our goal for the general fund emergency reserve. It sets those reserve levels, however, it pegs them at a dollar amount through fiscal year 22. It formally sets the reserve percent measurement at 3 years of trailing revenues. And importantly, it requires annual review by the council. So next March, we will do another 10-year budget forecast. We'll lay this out again. We'll look at the revenues from this year. We'll make sure that we've put the right amount in the bank, and next year we can change this, these numbers, or we can say, hey, yeah, we've got it just about right, and go on. But we're going to keep our finger on the pulse using a regular budget forecast in the years ahead. So that's policy issue number one. Policy issue number two is the risk management fund. The risk management fund is a special fund to cover certain unanticipated claims and expenses that are not covered by the city's insurance. The city's insurance covers the vast majority of potential claims against the city. There's a few things that it doesn't cover, though. It's important to note that the risk management fund is indeed a fund. It receives essentially deposits during the year from the base budget. So in the budget that you'll approve, with every salary, there's a piece of from workers' comp and a piece from insurance. And a little piece of those go into this fund. So this fund, as the year goes through, gains money. Deposits are put into it so that when there is a claim or an expense that is risk-related that's not covered by insurance, we can take that out of this fund. The current council policy is that the fund must have a balance of $500,000. A previous council set that. Bottom line, that is quite high. It's high compared both to other cities, and it's high compared to our real requirements. I want to lay both those things out for you because they're important. So Pismo, for example, has a $50,000 requirement, one-tenth of what we have for their risk management fund. Atascadero has no risk management fund. They simply use their general fund reserve as a risk management fund. So comparing ourselves to similar cities, we are not doing something risky or overly concerning by considering reducing the $500,000 reserve down to $100,000. In fact, we will still be have a greater reserve than both Atascadero and Pismo have. It's also important to note that $500,000 is far greater than our actual requirements. And in fact, if we look at, I just described how this fund receives deposits every year. Historically, over the last 5 years, the average of the deposits the fund has received has been about equal to the amount we've had to take out of it. So the deposits are going into that, and we're taking money out of that at about the same rate. So having a $100,000 reserve level in this fund is quite healthy, considering it both as from a comparison perspective and considering from what we actually need to take out regularly. So were the council to reduce that minimum level from $500,000 to $100,000, the city would have at least $700,000 available now for investment on significant city goals. And some of the goals that we have, general plan, local coastal plan rewrite, are costly goals. What if, contrary to both history and our expectations, we had a serious hit to the risk management reserve for more than $100,000? As we just talked through, our general fund emergency reserve remains very healthy. It remains well above the 16.5% government financial officers Association recommended minimum. And so if we were surprised with a hit to our risk management fund that was above $100,000, then you could approve using general fund emergency reserves to cover that. Those are they're the same color of money. We're allowed to use them for both. Neither are in a special enterprise fund. So staff recommends that you adopt Resolution 3415. First we recommend you adopt Resolution 3215. That resolution commits $100,000 of the risk management fund to the reserve, to a reserve level, and then it authorizes expenditure of unassigned or excess monies in that fund to appropriate strategic development or investment projects. And we also recommend you adopt Resolution 3415, which directs the surplus funds in that risk management fund right now to be spent on specific strategic investments. Some of those include ADA compliance corrections around the city, the general plan, local coastal plan, economic development strategic plan, as we heard during the announcements, that, such as Grover has did several years ago, and some IT investment spending. So what I've just covered are two policy level issues, and that is three of the four resolutions that you have before you tonight. So the first resolution, one of those deals with the general fund emergency reserve, and then two of them deal with the risk management fund. One reduces the reserve level in it from $500,000 to $100,000, and the other says we're not going to go waste that on a whole bunch of little stuff. We're going to target some specific strategic investments for that spending. I'll now go into the base budget for this year. First, I'll just walk you briefly through the staff process. So the staff started with the FY 14-15 budget as a base. Then we adjusted for some organizational changes. As you're aware, we've moved maintenance from recreation into public works, pulled community development out of public works into its own department. So we had to make some adjustments there. We took significant input from the management partner's 10-year budget forecast. That budget forecast was very important to all of us. We added essential spending that has not been in previous budgets. And these are things that were identified by management partners as deficiencies in our organization and our financing, a capital replacement fund, more investment in IT, and we still came up short. So we went through all that, and that's when we did all the smart things we could, and we were still short, so we went at it the old-fashioned way and sent all the staff back and said, chop another 1% out of your budget to get our budget out of the red and actually into about $70,000 in the black and a surplus, which is where we need to be. I will note that that 1% hurt since we were not cutting any labor. Or at least any full-time labor, and that represents the vast majority of what our budget goes to. That 1% was really focused on about, for example, in police, about 20% of that budget. So it was a bigger slice than just 1% because it was really only on the discretionary sort of things that we could that we spend. We assumed fee increases consistent with costs, and as I spoke in the budget study session, and I'll go into a little bit more detail when we get to the recreation piece. So costs are increasing significantly because of a rise in minimum wage. We made some assumptions that we are going to be able to grow the pie, and I may be coming back to you at mid-year budget review and say we were not able to do that as completely as we hoped, but we believe we have enough potential. We believe we were conservative enough, especially with TOT and with our property tax assessments, that if we need to come back and if we didn't meet some of our revenue targets, I think it's likely that we're going to exceed revenue in several other areas. So bottom line is we ended where we needed to be with about a $70,000 surplus. So again, our general fund emergency reserve ends this year higher, so we can go into that 2 years of deficit spending. And that is the budget that we brought to you 2 weeks ago at the study session and that we bring to you this evening for approval. Whoops. So I'm going to go fairly briefly through the staff section budgets. I want to do this again in enough detail that that you're comfortable and that the viewing public knows where their government is spending their tax money and on what. So each of these charts is laid out very similarly. The top chart essentially states what things are fairly generic spending in each of those different sections. And I say generic, might not be a great word for it, but really spending where we don't have a bunch of choice unless we cut labor or we don't use any paper copy machines and those sort of things. So for example, this is what I'll say. The bottom left is where there is discretionary spending that we're doing and that is tied to specific city goals normally. So, for example, this is the city council's budget. It covers the personnel costs for five council members. It includes the insurance share that is shared between every budget in the city. Every department budget includes LAFCO payment, our League of California City membership, attendance at certain events like the League of California City's annual conference. In discretionary spending, and we'll get to this at the end, this budget does include $7,500 of benevolence giving to a number of worthy causes here in the area, such as SCORE and senior nutrition. And it provides $1,000 for our general plan citizens advisory committee to conduct an offsite or some other some other activity to sort of gel them and get them together for the three hard years of work that they're going to be doing as a committee. This is the city manager section of the budget. I'll note here that almost all of the rest of these budgets have this funny thing going where we might say it includes 75% of a city clerk or 25% of an administrator. Most of our budgets have some shared labor. So, for example, the city clerk is charged 75% to this account, but is charged 25% to our risk management and to our attorney's account because the city clerk provides services to both of those accounts. So this is a fairly normal thing, and I won't go into that in great detail in any of the future staff section budgets here. So there is some goal-related spending in the city manager part of the budget. There's $30,000 for an economic development opportunity fund that's directly tied to goal number six, economic development, and that is for emerging opportunities that that we have to spend a fairly low amount of money on specific economic development opportunities or projects. For example, the chamber recently asked if the city would partner with them for a business walk to help improve the business climate here in Morro Bay. Actually, Sam is already working on that. One of the things they asked for was some staff member time. We gave them Sam. They also asked for $500 of support to do some printing and things associated with that. So that's what this fund is for. It's so that I can execute some low-level economic development activities without having to bring every $500 request to the council. That said, closely monitor and track what we spend out of here so that at mid-year budget review I can give you an accounting of it and say, and you know, it's this now down to $15,000 and here's what we spent that $15,000 on. It includes $3,000 for some staff training events. As you heard from management partners last week, we could do much better in succession planning and in staff training, and so there's some there's some individual training money built into each budget for each staff section. So, For example, in public works, there's money in there for required engineer skill training and certifications and those things. This item will allow me to do some targeted development for staff, especially in the area of succession planning. And then there's $1,000 for one or more advisory board volunteer recognition events. We get a huge amount of service from volunteers, both the ones that are assigned to boards and the ones that are coaches and police volunteers and all sorts of other volunteers. And I believe we all think it is appropriate to recognize them in a small way, and that's what this will allow us to do, have an informal luncheon or something to say thank you to our volunteers. This is the elections and contract services part of the budget that allocates $10,000 for elections, and yes, you're right, there's no election this year. That $10,000 will sit in a fund. It will get $10,000 more added to it in the FY17 budget, which will give us the $20,000 that we'll need to run an election in November of 2016. There's additional money in here for the animal services provided by Slo County. We don't have our own animal services operation here in Morro Bay. We rely on the county, and we have to pay them for that service. And that is the approximate, that's what we anticipate we'll be paying for them this year. If we have fewer animal service requirements, then we won't be charged as much. But if we have more, then we'll get charged more. This is the city attorney's piece of the budget. The base part in this budget includes 40% of the contract that we have with Alsher and Winder and Winder. 20%, the other 60% is divided between three enterprise funds. So the general fund pays for 40% of that contract, and then the harbor fund, the water fund, and the sewer fund each pay for 20% of that contract. I think it's important here to note on the bottom that where we are and with attorney services. So looking at the trailing 12 months from about 3 weeks ago, Alsher and Winder, that contract had cost us $292,000. That does account for a $30,000 payment that we anticipate receiving due to a specific case. But so essentially our contract attorney has cost us about $292,000 over the last 12 months. In the previous 5 years, attorney services have ranged between $270,000 and $300,000 in 5 years. Actually, I need to make a correction. That's $292,000 for Alsher and Winder and all the other outside legal fees that we have. So we have some cases and some litigation that are old enough that A&W are not working on those, or they have outsourced, or we have outsourced other attorneys. So the city has essentially all legal activities, the contract and other representation has cost us $292,000 in the last year with our contract attorney, and that's the first year we had that contract attorney. And in the previous 5 years, all of our legal representation cost us between $270,000 and $300,000. So what that says is that our contract attorney is costing about the same as attorney services previously. I will tell you, I don't have experience with the previous system, but our staff is very, very satisfied with the service that we're getting from our contract attorney. Their depth and their breadth is very, very good, and so we're thankful for that. We anticipate those costs dropping slightly over the next year as it's always more expensive to do something the first year you've ever done it, and B, we're going to, for example, not ask Joe to drive up here 4 times a month, but only come up twice a month, and then we will reach out to him and all of the attorneys in A&W, as we do already on a daily basis using the phone and email. So we anticipate that will drop slightly in the year ahead. This is the deputy city manager budget. There is no discretionary spending in it. that pays for one deputy city manager. This is the information technology budget. So this is the first place. There's some fairly significant changes from last year's budget. First, I'd like to note that there was $95,000 was moved into the IT section budget from all of the other departments. So the way that we used to do it is if Eric, well, he's a bad example because he's Harbor. No, we can use that. If Eric needed a new computer, he would just go buy a new computer, and he projected that cost in his budget. We're starting an interdepartmental service fund this year, so all of that money that the different departments would have budgeted for IT is all being put in one budget, and Mr. Taylor is in the process of either writing an RFP for or writing himself an IT strategic plan, that assessment and a strategic plan, so that we will all of our IT purchases and our IT operations will be centralized with sort of one brain, instead of having seven or eight of us do seven or eight different things and one person buying a Dell and somebody else buying a Mac and somebody else, Eric, buying a flip phone. That was unfair. I'm sorry. True, though. So first, we've consolidated all of the other interdepartmental or other the departmental IT budgets into this one budget. And second, there is an increase in this budget of $50,000 on top of that for IT spending. That is directly tied to goal 10D, information technology. You've given us the objective of fundamentally remaking IT in the city this year, and it's going to cost us a little bit of money to do that. And I am sure that we will improve our service markedly to the entire community as we deploy a number of customer-facing IT solutions, such as being able to get a business license online instead of having to come into to City Hall to do that, or permitting and other things. This is the finance budget. This pays for most of our admin services, or at least the finance ones. That is Susan, our Director of Administrative Services, our account technicians, our account clerks, and it's fairly sizable because there are some, first there's a number of people in there, and it has a number of things like our financial accounting system, our annual audit are paid out of this budget. I will note that we are, actually this was a management partner's recommendation, and we're so quick they gave us the recommendation last week, then we're about to select a new auditor. So the city has been with the same auditor for 8 years. That's about the max you want to be with an auditor without changing auditors, just to get a fresh look. And so we are about to select a new auditor for the city. That's the kind of thing that is included in this budget. There's no sort of goal-related spending in here. Similar for HR, this is Lori, who provides HR services, a single person for a 100-person organization. That is an essential as we continue to work hard to follow all of the various federal and state labor requirements and laws. Also note that our retainer, our contract with Liebert, Cassidy, and Whitmore is paid for out of this part of the budget. Now we'll get into some of the other staff sections, and there's an exciting second chart on some of these now, and I'll take a moment here to explain that, actually, when we get to fire, I think. So the top right is the police department budget. It is $3.5 million, dollars, which is 29% of our general fund budget. So it's a significant portion, obviously, of our budget. There's no change to staffing in the police department. This does not include this part of it, $70,000 additional dollars of Measure Q funding. That is not general fund funding, but Measure Q. There are a number of changes from last year, if you're trying to do a direct comparison, because of our switch to dispatch, which is going well. On special spending, I'll note that this budget includes funding for Goal 4F body-worn cameras. However, that's not coming out of general fund monies. That's coming out of a special, the COPS fund. And so we'll be able to pay for that out of the COPS fund instead of out of general fund. What the Christmas chart on the bottom right shows is if we were doing requirements-based budgeting, how much of the police department's requirement this budget provides. And so I'm sort of taking a parenthetical pause from the presentation here to remind you and provide the viewing audience a brief picture of what requirements-based budgeting means. And that means you look at what your actual requirement is to provide a service, and then you figure out how much you're funding that requirement at. So Amy, looking at police Chief Christie, Amy, looking at her police department labor only, actually we probably need one additional officer in order to have a full component of three officers on the street 24/7 and still have a little bit of extra capacity so somebody can be on vacation, somebody can be sick, somebody can be recovering from an injury. So that additional officer would require some more money. We don't have that right now. That's okay. But so we are funding our police department at about 95% of the requirement that we need to. That's pretty good. The fire department looks similar to this. No changes in staffing in the fire department. This does not include just over $300,000 of Measure Q spending. It does include $10,000 for a hazard mitigation plan that is one of our goals, and for EOC training, goal 4B and 4A. The fire department on the bottom right there, their requirement, budget versus requirement is 92%. So they have 92% this year of what they require to if they had the full component of labor that we think they probably need. Now, if you were to build, and I didn't put it in this, you've actually seen it, and the public can look at our 10-year budget forecast and see these charts. But if you were to look at how much we fund streets against the requirement that we have, you'd find that we only fund our streets to one-third of the requirement. So we need $1.5 million a year just to keep our streets as bad as they are. We only have $500,000 a year projected. So we only fund at 33% of the requirement for streets. In other areas, it's even worse. Our capital replacement fund is less than 10% of what our requirement is. And what that should do is give all of us a little bit of pause. And understanding that we need to do some things differently in the city in order to grow our revenues enough to be able to put the pavement down that we need to and put the money away for capital replacement of buildings such as this one when they require that. Nobody should take that as an indication of any idea that we think that we could or would want to raise taxes or fees in order to close that gap. That gap is significant. It's only going to get closed if we diversify our economy some, if we grow the pie instead of taking a bigger slice out of the pie. So that is why you are concerned and we're all concerned about economic development, about an economic development strategic plan, about reaching out to businesses and attracting some multiple head of household businesses to relocate to Morro Bay in a wise way. But in one sense, we're unsustainable over the long, long term, just like we are. We need to diversify our economy here in Morro Bay so that we can have streets that are drivable without a four-wheel drive, and that so we can have the appropriate capital replacement that we should have. Okay, parenthetical pause over. Back to the base budget. So this is your Public Works Department budget. They're about 17.5% of the total general fund budget. No FTE changes in Public Works. As I noted, that the maintenance division has been added to Public Works. The Community Development Department has been taken out of Public Works. This does include a number of items of goal-related spending. Goal number includes 4 tons of asphalt a week in this budget, which is related to goal number two, improved streets. There is $6,500 in the budget to replace one-fifth of the non-conforming regulatory signs that we have in the city. That is goal 2C II. And what that means is we have a number, a whole bunch of signs that don't meet the federal requirement to keep getting federal highway funds, federal street funds, and we need to get our signs up to the requirements so we can keep qualifying for those federal funds. And we've got a plan to replace a fifth of them a year, and this will replace a fifth of them this year, our first of 5 years to do that. And it also includes the always controversial street sweeping contract, which is it is included in this contract. It's a state requirement. Whether it is loud or causes more dust is perhaps in the eye of the beholder or the hearer. It is true that if you stand next to it while it's working, it is both loud and dusty. It's also true that that we're required to have this street sweeping contract as part of our sewer. That's what I meant. Storm drain requirement from the state. This is the Community Development Department. This was not in the budget last year because this was not a department. It was a subsection of public services. As you well know, we're getting great performance from the Community Development Department. This budget includes three part-time planners, about $130,000 worth of part-time work that were not included in last year's base budget, but that this council approved as part of a plan to improve our planning and permitting and building permitting. So if you're comparing to last year's budget, there's a little bit of a difference there because those folks were hired after last year's budget was approved with your consent. There's a significant amount of important discretionary spending in the community development budget. First, there is $100,000 for a part-time code enforcement capacity. That will help satisfy some of the concerns that the grand jury raised for us. It's not a panacea, so we've got probably the most important part of code enforcement is the process, but this will also give us the capacity to work that process. Secondly, there is $100,000 earmarked for the downtown specific plan that is directly related to goal 3E. Important to note here that anything in these charts is recurring. So next year, the downtown specific plan will hopefully be done or at least paid for, and this $100,000 is in the base budget, which means next year it is available for some other element of planning, whether it's a portion of the general plan or a North Main specific plan or a parking management plan. But we will be in position now having this in the budget so that we hopefully are not where we are in the future with the general plan, and that is having a general plan that's 24 years old and a $1 million bill or so in order to buy one. So this will allow us to keep up with our planning efforts and update parts of the general plan every 5 years as we're supposed to. This also includes $20,000 for related to goals 3B and 3D, design guidelines and secondary unit ordinances. And then it includes $15,000 for the hosting services for CityWorks related to goal 10D IT. I alluded to it a moment ago. I'll note it here because it's a community development thing. It's also an IT thing. So we haven't actually decided on CityWorks. We've done one demo with them. We have one more demo to go. But I'll use CityWorks as an example. We intend to, with your approval of this budget, deploy a customer-facing permitting system that will allow planning permits, building permits to be done online, allow customers to see where their permit is in the process. It will also be a work order system, so with Public Works, Sewer and Water, And we can actually tie this to a let us know kind of function on the website, so that when somebody lets us know that there are no mutt mitts in Del Mar Park, it actually goes through this system right to maintenance, and maintenance and whoever the mutt mitt filler guy is get an email that says, hey, we're out of mutt mitts in Del Mar Park. This system would also allow us to put the business licensing process almost completely online. There'll still be some situations where somebody will need to come in, but in many situations you'll be able to go online, apply for your business license, get your business license approved, be reminded at the appropriate time that you need to renew your business license, renew it online, and get your new certificate online. Okay, this is the rec department budget. This includes two full-time supervisors and one full-time admin. I'll note that I spent a little bit of time recently with several other local city managers, and Atascadero has two full-time rec people. Everybody else is are part-timers. Pismo actually only has one full-time person in their recreation services. So this budget has three full-timers in recreation services, and then much of the work in recreation is done by our great part-timers, some of whom have lots of part-time hours and others of whom have just a few part-time hours. They might be referees or facility rental attendance, those. We will have in this budget three full-time folks in the rec department. And as I've noted several times, Mr. Taylor has now oversight and supervision of the rec department. I'll note that, and I did this in some, and alluded to this a few minutes ago, but I think it's important to hit here, that the budget anticipates an 11% minimum wage increase. So minimum wage, when it comes to the 1st of January this coming year, minimum wage will have increased 24% over 18 months. That's pretty steep for an organization like the rec department, where most of its labor is based on minimum wage. Fees are going to have to follow somehow, but we do not intend to raise fees carte blanche on every program and every service 24% with this budget. We're simply not going to do that. We'll be bringing to you the master fee schedule at the first meeting in January. What we're counting on primarily, and actually, for example, our biggest program by revenue is Kids Club. The fees for Kids Club next year were released even before we finalized this budget, actually almost before we started it. So those fees are set. We're not going to go increase those fees. They've already been publicized. As you know, we're in the middle of a broader discussion about fee subsidy levels, and we'll continue to work that with you. And then at the first meeting in January, council meeting, we'll bring the master fee schedule for this coming year. In July. So the budget doesn't necessarily drive fees. So when you look at the revenues in the rec department, they are measurably higher than the revenues were projected last year. Part of that is due to some fee increases that have already been promulgated, such as the Kids Club has already been put out. But part of that is based on what we hope to be a growing of the pie, providing more programs, having more participants, which increases revenues because the overhead isn't going to be changing significantly. As I noted, we may not hit those revenue targets. We may have to adjust that at mid-year. I'm ready to do that. You've been warned twice now that we may have to come back. But as I noted, our estimates for TOT are conservative in this budget. Revenue estimates for TOT are conservative compared to even the management partners' projection. And our in business licenses also, we are fairly conservative on our business license revenues in this budget. Finally, on rec, there's $5,000 of program improvements under Goal 8G, which is one of our goals. This is the Harbor Fund, no change to personnel. A number of goal-related items in here. First, the little chart has now changed. What the chart now shows is how much this fund represents as part of the general fund plus this fund. So this is the right time to pause and say we've now transitioned from the general fund to an enterprise fund. This is the Harbor Enterprise Fund. It's treated as its own little business in the accounting world. Never the two shall mix. Eric's got a number of goal-related items in the Harbor Fund. Goal 2E, $5,000 for bike improvements. Goal 6H, $25,000 for to improve the fish cleaning station at Tidelands. Goal 7D, ADA compliance at the Harbor Hut, Harbor Office. Goal 7B, splitting this with the general fund, $15,000 for a total $25,000, $30,000 design for a potential Embarcadero promenade. This is just the design, and it will include significant public input in the way that we're planning to work that. And we've talked about the other items as well. Yeah. The next two funds deserve significant attention next year or in a few years, but you've given them significant attention already. That is the water fund and the sewer fund, the overview there. So in a normal budget year, you should examine the water fund and the sewer fund very closely, especially to ensure that the revenues are appropriate for what the expenses are. But since we have I've gone through the water and sewer rate increase process with two Public Works Advisory Board meetings, two study sessions with the council and a council meeting, and then another council meeting, last council meeting, at which we adopted those rates. I'm very comfortable saying the rates are absolutely appropriately set now, both in water and sewer. We do need to keep a close finger on the pulse as we go forward for two reasons. We need to keep a close finger on the pulse next year, not to make sure that the rates are high enough, but to make sure they're not too high. So as we work through and get a better estimate on the construction of the water reclamation facility, as we look closely at the water fund and how that is turning out, as we discussed several times in this room, there is nothing that says we have to raise rates at the maximum levels that were recently set. So we owe you a very close look at water rates and sewer rates with next year's budget. So this is the water fund. You'll note that the water fund represents, it'll be a little more clear on a future slide, but represents, if you put the water fund and the general fund together, the water fund would be fully a third of those two funds, very significant. And the sewer enterprise fund would be 40% of a combined general fund and sewer fund. Okay, we're getting toward the end. Special funds. This is Measure Q. You'll note that 7.5% of Measure Q is going to some police functions. 32% of it right now goes to fire, and almost 60% in this budget year is allocated for streets. I'll note here that we don't intend to spend that $550,000 this year on streets. What we intend to do is to hold that and to match it with the $550,000 or so dollars from next year and to work on our streets every other year. There's a significant amount of overhead that we pay when we deploy a major contractor to come to Little More Obey to do street work, and we will get a lot more bang for our buck if we do that every other year instead of do it every year. Also note that at the next council meeting, we're going to bring to you a couple of proposals on how you might use some of that blue money right there, some of those revenues, in order to finance a significant amount of street work now instead of doing it in sort of million-dollar increments every other year. There's the obligatory total pie chart. Probably the only important takeaway from that, unless you really wanted to go through every one of those, you saw them all on the little items. What that does include is that shows the general fund and shows the Measure Q is included, and then the sewer enterprise and the water enterprise fund. Those are the two big ones on the left. The sewer enterprise and the water enterprise fund. So if you put all of those major funds together, those two equate to almost 50%, or really 50% of our total city budget. So they are significant parts of the budget. We tend to get focused on the general fund. As we've said a lot over the last few months, we need to keep a very keen eye on those two funds because they are fully half of where our taxpayers' taxes and rates are being spent. A couple of special topics. We're at 1 hour right now, and we're almost done, which is less than half of what we did this briefing in 2 weeks ago, and it's still light outside. So for special consideration, you passed a resolution last year during budget time that said the city would consider reducing the amount of general fund support to the Tourism Bureau and other outside funding requests, really support to different events. So based on that guidance, this budget does not include full funding for a number of things that were fully funded last year. For reduced funding, the Visitor Center previous budgets included $100,000 or more for the Morro Bay Visitor Center. That money was transferred to the TBID, and the Tourism Bureau managed the Visitor Center for us. The current lease for the Visitor Center runs through the end of this September. That's 4 months from now. You passed a motion last council meeting, or actually at the study session, directing staff to work with stakeholders to identify alternative delivery models for Visitor Center services and to execute that by the 1st of October of this year. We noted that methods might include using the city-owned old fire station chamber building, might include nesting in an existing business, could include the Visitor Center where it is right now. So this budget allocates $50,000 to sustain the current Visitor Center during the transition and then to fund whatever that alternative is. And I'll note that last Friday the staff released an RFP for Visitor Center services that's out in the street, and there are several organizations that are looking closely at that in order to provide proposals on how we might deliver Visitor Center services in the year ahead. Not in this budget is direct funding for economic development to the Chamber of Commerce. Last year and in some previous years, you had allocated $10,000 to the Chamber for economic improvement and incubator business services. This business does not include that. I would caution that, not really a caution, I would state clearly and unequivocally that is not any indication of this staff, this council, or this city's lack of interest in economic development. And it's simply putting our funds where we think that they will be most effective in the year ahead. So this budget includes $110,000 for a deputy city manager who is one of the parts of his portfolio is economic outreach. It includes $75,000 for an economic development strategic plan. It includes potentially $150,000 to bring high-speed business fiber to not just to the business district but to across all of Morro Bay to homes as well for telecommuting. It includes $30,000 in the city manager's economic development opportunity fund, $100,000 in a Morro Bay power plant redevelopment fund, and and I could go on. So I believe we are absolutely committed to doing the things that we think are appropriate for the city to be doing in the area of economic development. Not on this budget is any event funding. So previous budgets included $40,000. For example, last year, sometimes more, that was transferred at least last year to the TBID, essentially as grants to various festivals and other visitor-attracting activities. You have several objectives this year related to this. They include developing a funding policy for non-city events. We don't have a policy right now for how we do that. So you've told us to develop a policy this year. You've told us to improve event coordination, another one of the hats that Mr. Taylor has. In fact, he participated in a 4th of July coordination meeting last week. He's working with a yoga group now that wants to have a yoga festival here in Morro Bay. So we are. You gave us that requirement, and we've solved that, or we're working on that at least. I'll note that most cities do not give significant general fund dollars to recurring events, and I'm not sure they ever do it for anything. But they don't do it for anything but marketing normally. So, for example, Pismo will dedicate some money, but it is TBID money, LBID there, for marketing of new events, and they have a three-year sort of sunset. So they will help a brand new event with its marketing for 3 years, and then if they can't float by the end of 3 years, then they cut them off. Most cities use TBID money to do that, assessment district money, not general fund money. We may consider going that direction in the years ahead. I just mentioned that SAM will provide event coordination in City Hall as a service to all events. We recommend that you approve event funding in the coming year on a strictly limited basis, so strict that there's no money in this budget for it. But there is a little bit of money, for example, the city manager's economic development fund. That's where if somebody came to you and presented a compelling case for city support for a specific new event for this year, then you could go to that fund and provide some support there. But this budget does not include any funds directly for city events. That said, I'll say this may be sort of a reset year for this. Other cities do support events. They mostly, as I noted, just noted, do that through TBID funds. And as we work through a relationship with tourism and events in the years ahead, there is good reason for the city to be interested in events, because bringing people to the city has a significant impact on sales tax, on TOT, and all sorts of things. So we're not saying that this is a permanent moratorium on any future city support to events. We really think we need a great policy in place, a great procedure in place, so that everybody knows what the process is to bring great events to Morro Bay. A word here on a couple of sort of various buckets. That's a very technical term for fund or something else, but there are a number of funds of buckets that we have that are in this budget, some that were in here previously, some that are new. And I just want to cover what a couple of the key ones are. So there is a capital replacement fund, and what that means is there's a line item or a silo in the bank account where monies for capital replacement, for example, are kept. And if they're not spent this year, they're there next year for that purpose. And so the first and most important for us to establish is a capital replacement fund. That is a fund in order to do the essentially funded depreciation, to do the major maintenance, and then the capital replacement of various city facilities. So when this building needs to be replaced in 30 years, that there is money in the bank already to do that, and we're not going out to get a loan to do it like we had to do recently with the fire station. So that we're going to do a whole lot more homework this year on how much we should be contributing to this fund each year. Frankly, it's probably about $1 million, and we're putting a paltry $75,000 into it this year, but at least we're starting. So we're starting to do long-term capital savings with this budget. Similarly, with vehicle replacement reserve, that one has $23,000 in that bucket right now. This budget allocates $75,000 for that. Another thing we're going to do this year is do a better, one of the objectives you've given us is do a good assessment of, is it smartest for the city to own vehicles like we do? Is it smarter to lease? So we'll be going through that this year. I mentioned the Morro Bay Power Plant Redevelopment Fund. So there is $100,000 now in a fund, in a bucket, for you to use as appropriate for redevelopment encouragement at the Morro Bay Power Plant. So if you found it important in the years ahead to, for example, hire a consultant or a lobbyist to work on a specific aspect of redevelopment for the power plant, there's some money to go and do that with instead of dipping into the general fund, the active year's budget. The general plan fund is maybe the most important. So there is currently $501,000 in the general plan fund. That does include $390,000 of grants. So some of that money is not literally sitting in there, but it is grant money that has been approved for that. This budget with the one-time spending from the risk management fund allocates an additional $300,000. So really at the beginning of this coming year, there will be $800,000 available for us, for you, to spend on the best consultant to help us write our general plan over the next 3 years. Capital Projects Fund, that's similar to the capital replacement fund, but not really. This is money that is there to do capital-like projects in the city that is not replacement of an existing facility, but is something new. Let's say that we needed a new bathroom at a park. And we thought that a park or downtown somewhere, and we wanted to construct something brand new, this is project money that is available to construct. Here's a good example. If we decided it would be wise and appropriate to put artificial turf on Lila Kaiser Park, then this is the kind of place you would go to get the money for that. This will not be spent without council approval. We owe you a priority spending list for capital projects. IT Transformation Fund, this is another jolt into IT in order to get our IT up to snuff. There's a number of things that we need to do. We need to move all of the various servers and racks and blinking lights and stuff and blue cables out of City Hall into the fire station, which has backup generator power, which is a better, more centralized site for that. So this will help us do some of those starter things to really get our IT transformation going. The Compensable Leaves Fund is worth a comment here, a little bit of good communication on that from a number of residents in the last few weeks. So you'll notice there's nothing in it. There's nothing projected. What really should be in there, perhaps, is about $600,000. So as city employees build up vacation time that is not used, when they retire or when they leave service of the city, they have the right, based on their contracts, to exchange that vacation time for pay. So it's compensable leave. It's important when you look at this page in the back of the budget, it also lists sick leave and has a very big number next to it, $1.1 million, as an unfunded sick leave liability. That is actually, it's important that we put it in there that way, but sick leave cannot be converted to dollars. So sick leave can only be converted to time served. So if you have 30 days of sick leave and you retire at 20 years exactly, you actually get to retire at 20 years and 1 month of service. But we do have a $900,000 unfunded liability in vacation. That would be really, really bad if everybody retired or quit work today. That doesn't normally happen, or I don't know if that ever happens, actually, unless you're in Stockton. But that is not going to happen. What we do right now is we try to project with each year's budget who might retire and about how much unfunded liability we have for their compensable leaves. But it would be a wiser way to do business to build this fund up so that we had in the bank that money that we needed to pay everybody's compensable leaves at one fell swoop. It's not a crisis. We've been working this way, like we are right now, for years. Without a crisis, what happens if somebody decides to retire? Then we look around the budget and find if five people retired, they would probably be about $30,000 this year, and we would look around the budget and find $30,000 to pay those compensable leaves. But we're putting this in here as a placeholder because we want to start saving against this, sort of like the capital replacement fund, so that in future years we're not robbing the current year's budget in order to pay those, but we have the money in the bank for those unfunded liabilities. Council benevolence. As you'll recall from one of the early slides, there are $7,500 for council giving to worthy causes. You approved this list last at the budget study session, and this goes through where you have allocated that $7,500 for this year, primarily to SCORE, to Senior Nutrition, to the Community Resource Office, and to the SLO Housing Trust. Finally, one-time investment or one-time spending, a reduction of the risk management fund reserve requirement from $500,000 to $100,000 could make as much as $800,000 available for one-time investment in critical goal-oriented projects. We won't know the precise amount until we end this fiscal year and see what our revenues are from a number of revenues that have not come in, see what our expenses are from a number of bills that are due, but it will be a sizable amount of money in the $700,000 to $900,000 range. Staff will look for other funds, special funds, to pay for approved projects out of. There are a number of funds like parking in lieu, government impact, where other projects can be paid from. The projects that you went through 2 weeks ago, however, are on the list. I'm about to show this to you. These projects, will be, when you approve this budget, will be considered validated, i.e. you've approved that project, and prioritized with the adoption of this budget. So you will be saying that these are valid projects, they are prioritized, and that'll give your staff the flexibility to go execute those projects either with the one-time funds based on the system that you approve, or if we can use other available funds or grants in order to do those projects. So with the adoption of the budget, you're going to approve spending 75% of available one-time funds on top priority projects now as they are approved. And then we're going to hold back 25% of that and bring that 25% spending back to you at mid-year review. So we don't want to shoot the whole 100% of it now, but be a little bit patient, and we'll come back at mid-year review. We'll be able to do a better assessment of our revenues, of our expenses, and make sure that we actually, and projects, frankly, and see if something of higher priority has raised its head. On approval of this, you will be approving contracting authority for projects that are noted. So some of these projects, we are absolutely going to come back to you for approval to execute. Big ones like the general plan, local coastal plan. Some of them, if they're so noted in approving this, you're also approving the authority to go let the contract for that project. So here is the list. It's horribly hard to read in a slide, but this is the list that you prioritized and approved at the budget study session. I'll go through the top, the green level, and sort of down to about the level that we think we will have the funds to execute. So there's $300,000. This is in priority order, $300,000 for the local coastal plan, general plan. All of these are up to $75,000 for an economic strategic plan, up to $85,000 for City Works or a similar customer-facing IT solution, web-based solution for, as I described before, for permitting, for business licensing, and for work orders. $2,000 for vision, values, and mission, one of our goals and objectives. $100,000 investment in information technology. A combined $30,000 for the Old Town Link and the Embarcadero Promenade planning, not execution, but planning. $100,000 for ADA assessment and compliance. Up to $25,000 for traffic management plan so that we have a great traffic management plan so that we are spending that traffic, that streets money on the right things. $6,000 for improved public information, which will take the form of monthly water bill mailers. We understand that not everybody gets all of their information from the web and Facebook and all those things, and we want to use various means, including the old-fashioned means of water bill mailers, to communicate. $25,000 for the pavement management system. Oh, I got that one wrong again, didn't I? The traffic management, $25,000, is for traffic calming projects. The $25,000 for the pavement management system is for a refinement of our pavement management plan. And then up to $150,000 investment in high-speed fiber. The cut line actually, so we will, based on where we end the year, likely be able to execute all the way down through and including the high-speed fiber project. And the ones that are marked in green are the ones that represent about 75% of spending, and the other 25% are down there in the yellow. Actually, it goes a little bit further down, but we'll once we refine the numbers on each of these projects, we'll know where that 75% line is. Okay, so in summary, the staff and the council, with significant public input, has spent a whole lot of time working on this budget. Two council study sessions, one council meeting, agenda item developing our goals and objectives, and then a 10-year budget study for a budget forecast study session. Two budget forecast presentations I did as at council meetings, and then the budget study session that we endured a couple of weeks ago. The city now has a realistic and informed forecast of our budget picture over the upcoming 10 years. We are seeing the potential of a recession and the short-term pension contribution spike. Those provide a reason to consider a managed approach to our general fund reserve over the upcoming years. The city has excess funds in the risk management fund that should be invested in strategic investments instead of being kept on the sidelines. You need to invest money to improve things, and that money is really being kept on the sidelines right now. We have an opportunity to invest it. The FY16 budget shows a $70,000 surplus in the base budget that is required to build our reserve to prepare for the 3 to 5 lean years ahead. The budget does not increase full-time employees anywhere, but it does provide funds for the part-time planners that were hired last year and funds for part-time code enforcement and community enhancement capacity. The budget is tied to the city's FY16 goals and objectives. It provides adequate funds to complete many of those objectives. Some of them will not get completed because it doesn't provide enough funds for every one of them, but that's how budgets go. So the resolution 3115 that is before you, which is the budget resolution, an important note here is the first thing that budget resolution does is it adopts the budget letter. So for those that are so interested, the 18-page budget letter that we prepared and is now signed in the budget goes into detail on many of these things and other things that we've discussed, including the 75%, 25% division of the strategic investment. It talks about the thought process behind changing the general fund emergency reserve level. It talks about the buckets and one-time spending. So that letter is part of the adopted budget. And really, you can't just look at the spreadsheets and the resolutions. You need to look at the budget letter, because that's really it's sort of the brains behind it. And the resolutions and the spreadsheets are the resolutions are sort of an overview, and then the spreadsheets are the very detailed $2,500 for copy paper here and there. The resolution 3215 makes the changes that we discussed to the risk management fund. Resolution 3315 makes the near-term target changes that we discussed in the general fund emergency reserve. Resolution 3415 identifies the strategic investments funded by the risk management fund excess. That completes the presentation. Hopefully not in too much detail, but in enough detail that we can be confident that we've done our homework, that we are taking an appropriate, measured approach to some of the concerns that we see coming ahead, that we've thought through these resolution recommendations, and that we're not being either excessively conservative or excessively spendy, but we're taking an appropriate, measured approach to our budget. And therefore, your staff recommends that you adopt each of the four resolutions, and in fact, you could adopt all of those in a single motion should you choose to do that.
Thanks, Mr. Buckingham. And since we move to have all four items addressed at once, it was certainly due the staff report and presentation that you gave us and the community. So thanks very much. So at this point, we can go through questions. I think just to your recommendation on the recommendation for all four, either we could note that 3513 and 3215 as amended. Okay, and we can either pull those out separately or just make sure that we we include as amended for those two. Okay, we're getting a nod ahead, but I just want to be clear on that so we don't miss it. And so at this time, we can go through questions. We will open it up for public comment and then go through deliberation, discussion, and action and go from there. So I'll look to my left. And Christine, do you want to start us off on any questions, and then we'll go to public comment following that?
Sure. I really appreciate the wrap-up of the last 20 hours worth of work on the budget in an hour and a half. That's not too bad. But I would actually, I was thinking about as you were going through the report and reviewing my notes and questions from the last several meetings, I don't have any individual questions, but I would just, for people who are watching tonight for the first time, I would encourage them to go to the May 20th minutes, which we just approved this evening, and dig into the YouTube connection, because it's really easy to navigate that and see who said what, because I think we had a ton of questions on that date and spent 5 hours on the budget. So this is really, tonight's the result of those meetings prior to today, starting in March. So at this point, I honestly have asked all my questions, and it's coming back to us really for final approval or something we've forgotten. So I don't have any questions further, but I would like discussion. Thanks.
Thank you. Matt?
Yes, I do have one question, and I just kind of sent an email earlier to Susan, but then also then Dave, I guess you can, towards you, and then maybe Susan. Could you explain another time the rationale of reducing the risk management fund from 500 to 100,000?
Sure. So at one point, the council set the reserve level in the risk management fund to $500,000. Not sure what the rationale was for doing that, but comparing ourselves to other cities, it is quite high. As noted, Pismo has a $50,000 requirement. Atascadero has zero. So Atascadero doesn't even have a risk management fund. If they have a risk management event that is not covered by the accumulated risk management funds, they go to their general fund emergency reserve to pay for that. So both comparing ourselves to other cities and then looking at our requirement, our risk management fund accumulates money during the year from workers' comp and from insurance contributions. It also, and that accumulated amount each year is roughly equal to what we end up pulling out of that fund to pay for risk management sort of activities, legal representation for certain activities, or perhaps a claim that's not covered by our insurance. So the rationale is, essentially, you've got $400,000 or more sitting on the sidelines that could be invested in a general plan, local coastal plan rewrite, or other important investments, and there's no requirement to have that money sitting on the sidelines. It would be better invested.
All right. Well, that's okay. That clears up something. But looking at that $500,000, reducing it to $100,000, and one of the items that you spoke about, and maybe you can speak to this. I mean, I understand your rationale, but then maybe give some more words to it. We have these unfunded liabilities. And knowing that that number could be right around $600,000, are we better spent using this excess money from risk management for our one-time spending as averse to maybe putting some money away for unfunded liabilities?
At this point, I'd say I don't think it's better spent there. It's really an investment question. We have some things that we need to spend some money on in this city. We have a general plan that's 24 years out of date. We know we have a structural fiscal problem, and we need to do some economic development work. If we don't invest in those areas, we're going to have even greater problems in the years ahead. This is a good time to make some of those investments. With regard to the unfunded liabilities, specifically in the compensable leaves, as I noted, and that's the way we've always done it, is not necessarily a good answer, but we've survived the last 10 years doing unfunded liabilities the way that we do them right now, and that is, and actually your department heads have projected into their budget for this year, if they believe that there are some retirements or some employees departing. So that the unfunded liability that we anticipate for this year is built into the budget a little bit already. It, on average, if you take the unfunded liability number that's there, 617, if you take that, you divide that by the number of employees that we have and the normal turnover we have, it's about $30,000 a year. So we would anticipate having to pay about $30,000 of that $600,000 this year. If we took all of that risk management excess and put it in the unfunded liabilities, we could feel good that we wouldn't have to pay that $30,000 this year or next year or the year after. That is something to work toward, but with the other issues that we have in the city, I believe it is a wise investment to, if we put all that in the compensable leaves fund, we likely would not be buying a general plan, not be buying a economic development plan, not be buying IT improvements, and a number of other investments that we management partners and others have said we think are important for our city now, really to pull out of. Not a steep dive, but a gradual dive in order to improve our general economic health.
All right. Thanks, Matt. John?
So this will just be a couple of questions, and I'll reserve the comments for the summation later. Mr. Buckingham, did I hear you say the RFP will be going out for possibility of a new auditor for this audit period that will be coming up?
RFP is out, and if I would read my emails today, I would probably get to select one. RFP is out. Proposals are back. Four or five different competitive proposals. Susan's made a recommendation. I just need to act on it.
Great.
We will have a new auditor this year.
Great, yeah. And I really asked because I wanted that to be repeated for the audience, so thank you very much for that. When's the last time the city did a full a risk management study evaluation in terms of liability risk? Have we ever, do we?
I'm going to turn that over to Susan.
Yeah,
the first preface I'd give is I did look at how much in the risk management fund we accumulate each year, how much we've been spending out of that on risk-related activities, and I did that level of assessment to make sure that we were making a wise decision on the $100,000 reserve. Right. I don't know when the last time is that we've done a full risk management study.
Good evening. As far as doing a study on the risk management fund to see if our reserve level was appropriate, it was, probably back in 2010, we sort of gathered all together, Andrea, Rob Schultz, me, Jamie Boucher, we got together in a room, we sat there and looked at what kind of risk we'd had over the years. And we felt that, we knew that CJPIA had told us that we didn't have to have a risk management fund, but that it's always good to have a little money set aside. We had a couple of things that were coming up that were going to be spending, and Rob said it would be a really good idea if we kept at $500,000 in there. And we decided that maybe that wouldn't be a bad, amount of money to hang on to. And so that's just kind of what we did. We all got together and put our heads together and thought, this sounds like a good idea.
And I'm sorry, I'll rephrase the question because it didn't really refer to the risk management fund. What I really meant was a potential liability evaluation of the city and where there may be potential litigious type situations. Example, Centennial Stairway presents a major risk to the city, therefore that should be placed on a priority list because it could be high risk, high liability to the city. So my apologies, not a risk fund determination, but a risk liability assessment of the city in general. But I didn't clarify that first. I apologize for that.
We've worked with CJPIA in the past on risk with the city, and it's probably been over a year since CJPIA has been out here to talk to us about risk assessment. But we do, it is an ongoing program.
Waiting for you to chew your food.
Dang, sorry about that. Two things on that. So we were at CJPIA was out here as recently about 2 weeks ago helping us through an ADA assessment class. And in fact, with this budget, you're going to be approving an ADA assessment that they will actually we're probably going to volunteer to be a pilot program with them. So they do, as part of their service, an ongoing, as Susan said, it's not a one-time complete assessment, but they do an ongoing assessment, look at various parts of the city each year, every other year. And we believe we've got a pretty good assessment and product with them.
Good. Thank you. I appreciate that. That answers that question. Let's see. I think I had one more. Find my note here. No, that does it. Thank you. Appreciate it. Noah?
Yeah, thank you. I just want to follow up on the compensable leaves as well. And we talked about this during the hearing, but there is a concern that knowing the baby boomer phenomena and the potential of somewhat of a bulk of retirement coming at us, sometime within the next 5 years, it does seem like we need to be doing some work to really prepare and realize that there's going to be more of those compensable leaves called for in that period. So I just want to hear your thoughts on how we could do that, because I do agree with that we need to invest this money to try to raise the ship and the tide and bring some revenues in to help deal with that. But how are you thinking we're going to plan for the bulk of baby boomer retirees coming forward?
So as I noted, if you just did a straight line analysis, you'd say about 5% or about 5 employees are going to transition a year. Your point is right on that there's going to be a bubble. So that said, your staff has a pretty good idea of who's working for them and what their plans are. And we talk about that, and that's part of succession planning. So we don't think we're going to have a 15-person or 20-person event this year. That may be coming in the next 3 to 5 years. So that's why, A, we're actually starting to think about this now, because we really weren't thinking about it before. At least we've got a bucket there to put money in. That will be one of the first place I'll recommend that we put excess revenues into this year. So as we go through the year, one of the things we're committed to, Management Partners mentioned, was when there's excess revenues and certain things are unprogrammed revenue, to put it in a reserve kind of fund, not just dump it in the general fund. So that's where the first place we would go to put those. And there are also a couple of other funds in the city that we need to do some more assessment on. They're sort of like the risk management fund. They're not quite that healthy, but to make sure that we've got the right amount of money in there and not too much. So there is, we could move some money from another fund, even $50,000 to $100,000, into that compensable leave fund. And as we make that assessment, perhaps as soon as mid-year review, and if not during the budget process next year, I think we've got it right for this year. But I do agree, and that's the reason we've brought it up, that we need to start putting money in there. And the other piece of that is, A, we need to get it built up, and B, we need to keep it at the right level. And so with next year's budget, what your staff is going to do is we're going to budget money to go into that for leaves that aren't used that year. So we'll figure out what the right number is that needs to be putting into that. So one of the lines you'll have in each section's budget under labor is a deposit into the compensable leave fund as we guesstimate who won't be using all of their vacation that year.
Thanks. And the other part of that that's interesting that you may want to talk to a little bit is as we have employees retire, you lose some ingrained knowledge and skills, but you also have the opportunity then to hire potentially at a third tier rather than the first tier. So there is a cost displacement or depending on the steps that the new employee does come in at. So that could be offset as well, that full cost with reduced cost to the overall operations of whatever budget it is. Am I right on that?
Where I'd like to get to in some of our key positions that are important knowledge-based positions. So, for example, Susan will likely be retiring in 2018. That's an awful lot of knowledge to lose. We need to be smart enough that we are, if not grooming somebody for that position, and I don't necessarily think that hiring internally every time is the right answer, so you can't always groom somebody for a position, but at least that we are budgeting so that we can have some overlap. So that we can hire Susan's replacement 3 months before Susan leaves. And some of that tier one to tier three stuff will help us, and that's why we are starting work on a succession planning so we can actually start thinking about budgeting for that, because you're exactly right. Losing, you know, a number of leadership positions and then some other key positions in the organization where if you lose your HR person, there's nobody else that's doing HR in the city, right? We're one deep in that area, and there's other – so we are beginning to be thoughtful about how we will do that.
Thank you. Thanks, Noah. A couple questions on I just wanted to bring up the you brought it up on the slide about the capital replacement fund. Kind of a question note on that. Mr. Buckingham, you and I commented about that earlier today in some of my questions. So we have a facilities maintenance plan currently in our budget that was a result of the Brannigan's Reef sale, so which is obviously that's going to sunset once the sale, the term of the revenues, all of that is closed. So basically this capital replacement fund is going to continue that effort. So I just wanted to comment on that. It's great that we're, you know, it was great that at one point we were able to take some of those funds from the sale of Brannigan's Reef to move into that. The next step, of course, obviously that would have gone away, so now we're stepping up and we're creating a replacement fund. So I just, you know, a little bit of comment on that, but as far as comments for the rest of council and everybody to think about that. And so just want to make a comment on that. But to get on some of my, the question as far as on page 22 of our presentation, that was slide 44, and that's the buckets. And just kind of a terminology question. I know it says vehicle replacement reserve. Is that a reserve policy that we're going to be looking at, or is that an accumulation fund? So, okay, so I know it's that way in the slide, but for the sake of just clarification, it's accumulation fund. And then the other one comment as far as the general plan fund in our document, just wanted to comment and question. It says for fiscal year 16, we have the available balance of $801,000. That doesn't reflect in our budget that way. And to the $300,000 that we're actually allocating to that fund in that particular line item in our budget, we're going to see that true up at some point. It's just, you know, where I'm going with that.
Absolutely. Sort of waiting for the council to approve that spending to reduce the limit on the risk management fund, and then as soon as this is adopted, then we will start moving those excess monies from the risk management fund into the appropriate place in the budget.
Okay, and so, you know, I know some of those are grant funds, but just for the sake of clarity and question, maybe we can put a line item in there what those grant funds are, you know, are we have allocated in our general fund, our general plan fund. If we can just have that to recognize, we've been awarded a certain amount from for grants, one with the Coastal Commission, one with the Ocean Protection Council. Maybe if we can just, you know, have a line item in that fund that identifies those two grant funds as far as what the potential revenue sources as we're drawing on that. Is that something we can do or something?
We could at least put those as notes.
Okay.
We'll work with Susan on whether it'll mess things up to stick them as lines in the budget, but at least on that page we can note that there are also $395,000 or $97,000 worth of grants associated with that fund.
Okay. And then as far as that Deputy City Manager budget, are we going to see that change at mid-year budget? Obviously, we were saying we have rec and park that's going to be assigned to Mr. Taylor, but in the budget, you know, obviously his budget is different than what is reflective and what he's going to be assigned. So will that change either next year's budget, or will that be something we adjust?
I don't think so. I'll need to think our way through that, but I'm not sure that we'll necessarily charge part of his salary to the rec budget. Maybe we would do that, but as we were building the budget, we hadn't made that decision yet.
Sure.
So
okay.
That's why it's where it
okay.
is.
And then just one other question on streets, not necessarily as much a budget question as it is information. It's great that we looked at our budget and we recognize that, hey, every other year we'll get more bang for our buck if we do our streets that way. I, based on some emails and phone calls, I guess I would ask, how can we convey that information, inform the community what that plan's going to look like, whether it be our billing information in our water bill, et cetera, just to let people know, hey, we're not doing this every year. And this is the plan for that, because I've already been getting some communication on that, and just want to make sure that people recognize that this is a smart approach, and this is why we're doing it. You're not seeing it this year, but every other year we're going to start doing it this way.
It's great. We'll make sure we start messaging that, and we'll start messaging that actually after the next council meeting, when we're also able to start messaging the the potential, based on what decision you make, of using some of that money to finance a note that would provide maybe a significant amount of money in the near term. So we'll message both those together as soon as we figure out what we're going to do with the idea of financing or a ballot measure. Then we'll be able to do that all together.
Great, thanks. Those are all my questions. At this time, I'll open it for public comment. For anybody who'd like to speak to this item, please come forward. Welcome.
Greetings. My name is Dawn Beatty, and I live in Moore Bay. Wow, what a presentation, Dave. An hour and a half. I do have a question. I don't know if it can be answered, but prior councils had a 27.5% general fund reserve, and now we're talking about going with the California standard at 16.5%. Philosophically, I'm just curious why prior councils thought it needed to be so high and why we're saying it's okay to go lower, because that's a big difference. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Anybody else for public comment? Seeing none, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council and staff. Mr.
Sure,
Buckingham?
I'd love to just, so previous councils have set the reserve level at 27.5%, and in fact, the resolution number 3 up there, 33, with that you intend to affirm that at 27.5%, not to reduce it to 16.5%. So we all believe that 27.5% remains the right number for Morro Bay. And why 27.5 versus 16? It's a great question. First, that's one association's minimum level. And based on the kind of community we are, a smaller community, from one perspective, maybe a risk-intolerant community when it comes to economic diversity. Most of our eggs are in the tourism basket, and so a really bad tourism event could have a significant effect. So we think that it's wise to have our reserve measurably higher than that 16.5%. With this resolution, you are affirming 27.5%, but also noting that there's a potential recession, that we have this CalPERS spike, and that it is wise, based on the forecast we have over the next 7 years, to target specific dollar amounts that may be under that 27.5%, really going down for 2 years and then building back up to 27.5% in the years following that. So so the reason that it's at 27.5 and not 16.5 is because we think that for the size of our town and for some of for the way that our revenues are structured, that having a higher reserve is wise for us. And important to note that we are not reducing it to 16.5%. We are essentially allowing ourselves to drop below 27.5% for a fixed period of time and for a very specific reason, because we see some concerns coming up. And were we not to do that, then we would have to cut services somewhere to make sure we don't drop below 27.5%.
And so, Dave, what is our general fund emergency reserve set for fiscal year 15-16?
May I suggest that you put up slide number 6? It's slide 12, I believe, and it lays it out. It's also the resolution also states it, but I think it's clearly stated there.
It's on page 6, slide 12, yeah.
Slide 12, page 6 for us, yeah. Perfect.
At the end of this year, this current year, on June the 30th, we need to have $3.38 million in this resolution will require us to have $3.38 million in our emergency reserve. That is actually 33.4% of 3 year trailing revenues. At the end of this coming year, we need to increase that to $3.583 million so that over the next 2 years, we can drop down below that 27.5% in the end of fiscal year 18 and end of 19, and then we start building back up to the required level.
Great. Hopefully that clarifies everything. Any other questions from council? We want to go into discussion. I'll start to my right. Noah, you want to lead us up on discussion?
Sure.
Deliberation?
I do want to follow up just on the discussion we were just having, because the other important component of the resolution is that we will revisit this every year, updating the forecast and deciding whether we're on a good course that's responsible. So at this point, we are adding to the reserve, and then next year's council will be checking in on this strategy and deciding whether the route that we're going on makes sense. So I think it's a good direction we're going, and I don't have any other comments.
John? Comments? Deliberation?
Comments, yes, deliberation. One, I want to just thank tremendously the staff for an outstanding presentation, or I should say presentations over time, multiple presentations. I think the purpose has been well stated throughout, and the rationale for how you approach the budget is very clear, and in the past wasn't as clear, and that's not pointing fingers or disparaging any individual. The process that you utilized, I think, this year was one that allowed for a significant amount of input, not only from the council, but also staff and the public. There were multiple opportunities to come forward and receive all of the presentations and information that we received, which is very substantial. If you look at the management partners report, that a lot of this is built on, that was available a number of times to us, and I really appreciate the fact that that was clarified, and that also that becomes a usable tool in the future for forecasting, and I think that's going to be very helpful. The third thing was the fact that you have prioritized spending, and I think that is critical. To move monies from one fund to another and have somewhat, and I won't call it an excess, but to deplete a fund, realizing that there's a better priority to spend it on, is something that I think cities or staffs or organizations often will not do. I think it's a bold move, but one that has to happen if we're going to succeed in the future. And if you could just put up page four, slide eight, or page four in the packet, but it's slide eight, budget forecast. Yeah, so that really tells the story, and I just want to remind everybody watching, staff, ourselves, that the picture is not dire, but it's not robust for the next 10 years. There's a lot of work to do, and we're not there yet, and it's going to take a lot more planning, a lot more processing, and a lot more prioritizing to begin to get where we need to go. One of the things I'd like to see potentially added would be the fact that, you know, you have a couple of major points that on page four, the 10-year forecast showed two looming concerns. I think there are three. And the third one is really the lack of a diversified economy. This city survives basically on TOT, property tax, sales tax, and other fees, and that's pretty much it. And if we do not seriously consider economic development with a specific emphasis on revenue enhancement and revenue diversification, a priority. We're going to have problems in the future. So I just want to call that out and say maybe we should add that as one of the third looming issue that we have here. The other thing I'd like to just make a comment on is that in the future as we go forward, it would be great to have the dashboard developed and metrics associated with it. And it's been great that you have really tied this to strategic planning. And we've begun a process of actually, I think many times Mr. Buckingham speaks, he relates things to goals. And I think that is extremely important that we are focused on targeted goals and our priorities for spending are on the goals that we have laid out for the year. And I believe the development of some dashboard so that we can have some accountability with regard to metrics and measuring for the future would be helpful also in this process. I am proud to be part of this process. I'm very thankful to all of the time that Mrs. Slayton put in and her staff, that you put in, that your staff put in putting together the best budget in my short tenure that I have seen here and one of the best I've seen in any organization that I've been in. Last thing I'll say is that the presentation format, I think for the novice out there who is not a financial analyst or a financial guru, is very readable, very understandable, and I appreciate the fact that we're getting to a point where I think this is becoming something that the common person can really look at and understand who doesn't have a significant financial background. And I think that's very important. So thank you for an excellent job. I feel very comfortable with supporting the initiatives and the resolutions as they stand.
Thanks, John. Matt?
I'd like to echo some of what John's saying and Noah and I guess everybody on the board. One thing, getting involved in the city operations, we've had a lot of people commenting about the reactionary nature of the budgeting process in Morro Bay, year to year, without any sort of long-sighted vision. And so with this 10-year forecast and with this budget tying it to the goals, I really can appreciate and I really would ask anybody who's interested, listening and watching at home, come get the process, read those first 11 pages. I think you said earlier, Dave, it was 11 pages. It really lays it out. It doesn't get, you can get back to the minutiae later on if you're a numbers person. But for those of us who are novice budgeteers, that those first 11 pages really lay it out and tie it to those goals. And I think having the department heads tie it in. And I can, if we've been here 20 hours doing this, I can just imagine how many hours the staff and you guys have been doing it. So I appreciate it, and thank you for the clarity.
Thanks, Matt. Christine?
Okay, so broken record time tonight. So, but what I wrote down was this is not a dartboard budgeting process, but methodically thought out, data-driven 10-year fiscal plan. And as it's been mentioned by everyone prior to me, that this is an annual review. We'll put into process tonight as soon as we pass all the resolutions, hopefully, that this will be an annual review of anything we're doing here that is a little bit outside the box for Morro Bay's zone in the past. But that to keep in mind that we are in the first year of a 10-year process based on the 10-year forecast that we've received, which we have simply not had that tool in the past. So that's why I say this is not a dartboard, but again, methodical, thought out, data-driven 10-year fiscal plan. And that's why I can feel confident when we looked at, again, that slide number 6, that we are extremely clear and methodical about why we are supporting the reserve levels, and we're basing it on rational thought and financial expertise that we don't have in-house, but that we were able to purchase from management partners. That's why number 2, that's why I feel comfortable with the general fund emergency reserve plan moving forward with the asterisk that it will be an annual review. Same with the risk management fund. I think this council began last year at budget time, discussed it mid-year budget review, but this year finally fully defined and refined what risk management fund is to do for us. We've spent a lot of hours on it. We even confirmed it again this evening. This has been a year-long process to refine, to define and refine risk management fund and what the dollars in that account are used for. We're ensuring that we are covered for emergencies that emerge. We have CJPIA as that's our risk management plan, is to have CJPIA cover us, plus we have something else already in our fund at $100,000. So I feel confident at this point moving forward with the risk management fund adjustment and to ensure that we are covered. Because I think that what I'm most in love with, which is for a non-numbers person a pretty exciting moment for me, I am in love with the strategic investment spending plan. Because we will be asked, as soon as we move forward, what did we spend the money from the risk management fund on? And it's very, very clear, it's transparent, yet it's targeted for the one-time use of those funds. So I think we have been very, very clear with that, but to pull it out and to make a resolution that specifically mentions it in detail is a benefit to us and a benefit to the residents and the taxpayers who allow us to borrow their money to spend. Lastly, something we haven't yet mentioned, but I think is going to really move our process forward. I would again compliment and just pile on to the compliments for our public for coming out and participating in the process, and to our staff for making it very clear for folks what we're seeing, to council for each of us taking a lot of our time to dive into the budget this year. But also I'm looking forward to something we did on May 17, was we created the Citizens Finance Committee. So you're going to see even deeper and greater participation. We have a 5-member committee. We've combined it with our Citizens Oversight Committee, and those folks represent not just fiscal experience or financial background. Some of them actually have past municipal finance experience. So it isn't that we're talking oranges to apples, but there are several folks there that will understand exactly what municipal finance is about, and that will be a great benefit to us, great benefit to our public. And I look forward to the next go-around and to have the benefit of having our Citizens Finance Committee participate. So thanks to all of you for enduring all of my questions sometimes if they get a little tedious, and I've endured yours too, so it's been a good process. Just kidding. And I would be very comfortable to move forward with all of the items that we've worked so diligently on tonight, whoever wants to start that process. Thank you.
Thanks, Christine. I'll start off with my comments by thanking staff and Dave for working so hard. I think it was interesting that at our last budget workshop session, it was as we were once again modeling management partners' financial forecast, budget forecast, we talked about how, okay, the request from Dave was, all right, staff, we need to go back and look for 1%. And everybody went back and dove in and found 1%. Doesn't seem like a lot, but for us, it's a lot. And, I just have to recognize that one more time. Just thank you all for doing that, and thank you for all of the work. Secondly, just thank council for supporting the management partner's investment. There was conversations about that as a great tool that we had from 2008, but really, really beneficial for us to reinvest in that management partners report and financial forecast that was brought to our staff and council as another tool. There are some items that were laid out in this presentation, and whether or not there was funding supporting the chamber, we are supporting the chamber through the facility, and certainly want to continue doing that. I'm glad that we came to the agreement for the visitor center, and hopefully we may be being able to refine that even more. So I'm supportive for that. The code enforcement officer for part-time, I'm open to how far we go into that. I think we've seen a lot of time and effort that goes into code enforcement. I think that's another one of those things that could be an efficiency for us in the long run, in many ways. And the management partners report that provided us with a 10-year fiscal forecast really is kind of the 10-year planning element. When we think about we're looking 10 years out, we're looking at these one-time investments that we've cataloged, and at this point I got to thank Christine for pushing for that strategic investment bucket and itemizing that coming out of our budget workshop. Just want to recognize her for making sure we define that. But along with that 10-year forecast part, when we look at what's before us, our general plan, downtown specific plan, many of these planning items, we've created some new buckets within this budget. I think all necessary, and that, you know, another tool that we have. But the 10-year planning thing, when you look at, as I do, the city of San Luis Obispo, they're seeing some of their development and economic vitality as a result of 10 years of planning. That's all stuff that was planned 10 years ago. When we look about being diversified and whether or not we can attract other industry, cottage industry, light industry, where are we going to do that? And I think, you know, San Luis Obispo, when I look at that, they've probably got the highest number of building permits ever in their history, in a good way. I mean, they've got a lot of high-tech industry that are coming in. They've got business parks that are building. So it's not necessarily the Morro Bay picture, but it is it's the 10-year picture and where we want to go. So I see a lot of key things that we're setting before us, and just want to get that out there and thank everybody for their work, and certainly thank everybody, their staff. So with that, we have some recommendations before us. We could make one recommendation, and I'd be glad to do that unless there's anybody that'd like to make a recommendation. So with that, I would make a recommendation that we approve staff recommendations for the Resolution 3115, 3215 as amended, Resolution 3315 as amended, and 3415. And I would make the motion to approve those resolutions that are in whole, basically approving this budget.
A second.
So I have a motion by Jamie, a second by Matt. Any discussion? Great. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Motion carries. Thanks very much. And with that, we've got one more item on the agenda, and that would be item D1. Item D1 is Resolution Number 4015, adopting a paid sick leave policy pursuant to the Healthy Workplace, Healthy Family Act of 2014 for unrepresented, unbenefited, and part-time employees. And Mr. Buckingham?
I'm going to start talking now that the thing is up. It's all good. And now I'm going to hand this to Susan Slayton, who is going to walk us through this.
Good evening. So I'll see if I could be brief. The agenda item that you have in front of you is about healthy workplace, healthy family. It's a sick leave policy for your unrepresented employees. Unrepresented employees are anyone who's not covered by an MOU, an agreement, or a contract. In general, for the city of Morro Bay, they're part-time employees. They're hourly individuals. This particular act, AB 1522, was signed by Governor Brown. It's effective July 1. And one of the things that it says is that we do have to have a policy in place by July 1. Just so you know, this doesn't provide any extra sick leave to benefited employees. So anybody represented and covered by an MOU, contract, or agreement, they're not going to get any additional benefit out of this. Qualifying employees can earn 1 hour of sick leave for every hour worked. Employees must satisfy a 90-day employment period before they can use the sick leave. Sick leave accrues at a minimum rate of 1 hour for every 30 hours worked, and employers have the ability to impose accrual and usage caps and also usage per occurrence. What we're proposing for the city is to front load the sick leave accrual. So upon qualification, a part-time employee would receive 24 hours. One of the reasons that we're recommending that, we have limited personnel resources to track the 30 hours and grant an hour. It's very difficult. We're setting ourselves up in many ways to fail. And so we felt that it would be more prudent to start with the 24 hours up front. We did want to impose a sick leave cap of 48 hours. That means that once an employee reaches 48 hours, and they only get 24 in a year. So once an employee does reach 48 hours, they stop accruing until they get that balance below the accrual. Also, this is not paid out if someone leaves. It just goes away. Wait a minute. Back up. So the annual usage cap will be 24 hours. If an employee decides that they're sick and they're out for their full 24 hours in a year, that's all they get. Additionally, we want to set a minimum use per occurrence of an hour. That way we don't have to worry about people wanting to take 15 minutes. You know, I want to run to the, you know, no, it's not going to work. It's going to be at least an hour, and that will work out really well for us. Resolution number 40-15 establishes the policy, and it attains compliance with the Act. And hopefully you've read the staff report. It was, I hope, pretty detailed. And if you have any questions, let me know. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. And with that, any questions at this point before we go to public comment? To my left? None? To my right? At this point, we can open up for public comment. Anybody would like to speak to this item may do so now. Seeing none, I'll close public comment, bring it back to council for deliberation, discussion, and action. Any other discussion? John?
It's mandatory, and it's another state-funded, excuse me, another unfunded mandate by the state of California. Thank you.
With that, any other discussion?
No, but I'll move approval of resolution 4015.
I'll second. So we have a resolution, we have a motion to approve resolution number 4015 as recommended and by Christine and seconded by Jamie. Council member, mayor?
Woman, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Leo, I don't know
okay.
What you are.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries 5-0. And with that, folks, we move on to declaration of future agenda items. For anybody who'd like to, for any of that? Seeing none to my left, to my right, we have no future agenda items. At this point, we can call this meeting adjourned. Thank you very much.
Great. Wow. Still light out.
The day is dark. You talk about it. One last year. One last
year. We approved a stop sign and a red light. And a green light with the budget. But if you came up with a better traffic control plan.